or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at one, it's Richard Spur, but next here on LBC, it's Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Dean. A packed programme tonight. We will be talking about how Keir Starmer has fared, trying to navigate between an increasingly aggressive American president and international law. And we'll hear opinion about whether what the Prime Minister has done is in a national interest. Also, how tactical voting could keep Nigel Farage out of number 10. We'll talk about the continuing scandal of our polluting water industry, and we'll get an update from our US correspondent for the latest from there. But first, Iran has apparently chosen its new leader. Israel say they're going to kill whoever it is. And Trump doesn't seem to know whether he has won this war already or even what winning would look like. That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Iran has announced the son of the late Ayatollah Ali Khamenei will be the country's new supreme leader. Mashaba Khamenei is a mid-ranking cleric with close ties to the Revolutionary Guards. The former U.S. ambassador to Saudi Arabia, Michael Ratney, believes it was a logical choice.
I mean, you can imagine the regime at this point is under an extraordinary amount of stress, and I think choosing Khamenei's son is probably the easiest choice and one that the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guard, could agree to. The Israelis have already said the moment somebody gets appointed as the new supreme leader, they become a target. In fact, he was probably a target already.
Khamenei has been seen as a front runner to become the new supreme leader, but his appointment is likely to be unpopular with President Trump. Naga Mortazavi is from the Iran podcast. She's been telling LBC the appointment is unlikely to change anything in Tel Aviv.
The one party who is absolutely benefiting from this is Israel. They want a weak state in Iran, essentially maybe even a failed state, maybe multiple state partitions or whatever. They just want to make sure they defang and remove any perceived threat from Iran.
Train passengers are facing major disruption tonight after a fire near Glasgow Central Railway Station. Dozens of services have been cancelled after it began in a building on Union Street. More than 50 firefighters are at the scene, although there are no reports of any injuries. A teenager has been charged following a stabbing at a school in Nottingham. A 15-year-old boy is still in hospital after being injured on Thursday. LBC's Midlands reporter is George Ike.
Detectives say they found two knives at the scene and arrested another 15-year-old boy in connection with the incident. That teenager, who we can't name for legal reasons, has been charged by police with committing grievous bodily harm and two counts of possession of a knife on school premises. The 15-year-old is due before magistrates on Monday.
And in sport and in football, the League One strugglers Port Vale have shocked Sunderland with a 1-0 win in the fifth round of the FA Cup. They joined Southampton in the quarter-finals after they scored a late penalty to get past Fulham by the same score. Leeds United beat Norwich City 3-0. LBC weather, cloudy for most of the night with patchy rain moving northwards. Where the cloud does break, it could become chilly with a low of around 5 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. Apparently, the new supreme leader has been chosen in Iran. Israel says whoever it is not long for this world. Naga Mortazavi is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and the host of the Iran podcast, and joins us on the line to talk about this. Hello, Naga.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I appreciate your time. What do we know about the person who is the new supreme leader?
Well, Mashaba Khamenei is the son of the late supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. He's also a religious figure. like his father, although not at that stature. But what is, I think, notable here is the circumstances of his appointment, because we knew before the killing assassination of his father that it was implied somewhat that his father was actually not in big favor of him becoming the successor, because this would essentially reenact a view of monarchy, of power being passed down from father to son, that is essentially something the Islamic Republic tried to end, millennia of monarchy in the 1979 revolution. So that is notable, and the fact that I think the circumstances of his father's assassination and the wartime and also the consolidation of power of the these institutions that support him, the IRGC, the intelligence and security apparatus, is very interesting and notable. Essentially, maybe he wouldn't be the successor if it wasn't for the assassination of his father and this wartime. And also, interestingly, I would even say President Trump's commentary against him potentially was maybe a final vote or a little push at the very end. And so it's interesting. He's a religious figure. He's not so much of a political figure, unlike his father. His father came to be selected back 3 decades ago as a former president, and also the previous supreme leader Ayatollah Khomeini was the leader of the Iranian Revolution in 1979. So they had very public, political, and religious stature. And for him, it's essentially a man that's coming out of the shadows. Many Iranians don't really know him, have never heard of him. And so it will be a new chapter for this family.
Trump, before he was chosen, said of this man that he was weak and he was a lightweight. Is that just typical Trump, or does he actually have knowledge of this person?
I mean, I don't know if the U.S. president really has a plan of what he's doing as far as the war right now or as far as Iran's political structure. He certainly doesn't understand that he couldn't have a say in the choosing. He even came out and did announce his say, and we see that the results came the exact opposite of what he was saying. I think he's trying to sort of reenact a Venezuela situation in a country that's anything unlike Venezuela. Yes, you know, U.S. has military supremacy in the world. It's the world military superpower in alliance with its regional ally, Israel, who has military supremacy in the region. But Iran is also not completely powerless. It wasn't a one-man show. It's a nation state. It's one of the largest countries in the region, one of the most populated, 93 million. It's repressive. It's authoritarian, but it's also a state of very powerful institutions. The top person was assassinated, immediately replaced by a council of leadership. The top brass were taken out during the war, immediately replaced by deputies, and Iran started shooting back, started retaliating as the underdog in the fight with very limited capacity and power. But it's inflicting a lot of pain on the other side and also spreading the war across the region to many of its neighbors who host U.S. bases that Iran sees complicit in the war. So I think the understanding in Washington, and particularly of this administration and specifically of the president of Iran, of that system of the Islamic Republic, is just very limited, if not incorrect.
Are you surprised that the speed with which the various leaders have been replaced by the Iranian regime? It seems as though they were expecting this and had planned for its eventuality.
Absolutely. I mean, this is something we saw in June, and essentially the Islamic Republic had been one way or the other preparing for this day. They have been preparing for this day of an attack, of an existential attack coming from the biggest enemy, the United States, for decades. I mean, that is why they saw the U.S. as a major threat, and that's the core foundation of their regional and foreign policy, especially vis-a-vis the West and the United States and also Israel. So this was a day that they prepared for, that they expected. And I mean, the Iranian constitution also has predetermined processes. So, for example, the Council of Leaders that replaced the Supreme Leader was part of an article within the Iranian constitution. But as far as the ranks, no, this is something that at least in the past 8 months since the June war, the Iranians had been saying publicly and privately that they essentially see each of themselves, senior leaders from the president all the way down. Each of them were saying, considering themselves a quote unquote martyr who would be taken out very soon, and they have lower ranks ready to take over so that they ensure that the system continues to run.
And can those people in the lower ranks essentially create create their own policy. I'm thinking of the it's seemingly random way in which Iran is bombing countries around it. Is it as random as it looks, or is there a plan to it, or are those of lower ranks just picking their own targets?
It's not completely random. No, Iran is not, for example, shooting in Afghanistan or Pakistan or Turkey. They had said before the war very clearly to their Arab neighbors across the Persian Gulf who host U.S. bases. You know, some of these countries in the Gulf are host to U.S. bases. Qatar is the host to the largest U.S. base in the region, Bahrain, Kuwait, Saudi. They had been going around essentially doing the rounds to some of these countries who were, some of them are very close allies, like Oman, like Qatar, even Saudi Arabia, Iran has a detente, and threatening them that if a war starts from the U.S. and Israel on them, that they see these countries as complicit or indirectly involved because of the of this, you know, bases, installations, infrastructure that they have been providing. And so from the Iranian viewpoint, they see these countries as somewhat involved. That's the reason they're trying to retaliate. And also part of it is the threat. I mean, it's bad policy if you look at it diplomatically, but on the battlefield as a military policy, they made a threat to these neighbors, hoping that they would lobby the U.S. and put pressure so the war wouldn't start. And these countries did. They lobbied the U.S. president very, very hard, saying, don't do it. This is going to turn into a regional war. It's going to be really bad for all of us. Nevertheless, the White House, the U.S. did it. And so now Iran is in a position that they had to make good on their threat so it doesn't turn into a bluff. And it's just bad options in front of them. If they didn't do it, it would be a bluff. They're expecting this war to keep coming back to their door. If they do attack their neighbors, it's just, you know, bad neighborly policy. They've had really good relations with some of these neighbors, like Qatar. They've been trying to amend relations and improve it with Saudi Arabia, and that's just going to ruin it, or at least damage it for a long time to come, even after the war.
What do you make of the reports of them, of the Iranians bombing countries in their area and then apologizing for having done so?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're seeing a little bit of a sort of a diplomatic bad cop, good cop playing here, because also some of these Gulf countries are coming out with political statements saying they have absolutely no involvement in the war. And then we see some intelligence from Iran or allies suggesting that there actually is some involvement. So I think both sides are kind of trying to a little bit of the hedging. But then also there is really a division within the Iranian system. I mean, it is a system in a somewhat disarray at a wartime. They are the underdog. So it's not running perfectly. It's not a very smooth operation as it would be before the war or not during the wartime. And then also the command and control structure is not very systematic. So Iran expected their command and control to be targeted, the top brass to be taken out. And they're doing essentially a somewhat mosaic system with forces spread across the country, especially when it comes to missiles and some of these drone launches, that they have some level of autonomy. This is something the foreign minister and other officials have also hinted, that there isn't a very structured top-down command and control. Sometimes they even lose contact with some of these centers, or they don't want to contact them for fear of surveillance and identification and then attacks from the U.S. and Israel. So there's various different reasons for this, but then there's also, you know, diplomatic or politicking. And then we know that finally that the president is a moderate figure. The president Pezeshkian, he ran on a campaign of diplomacy on resolving issues with the neighbors, on resolving issues with the U.S., with the West. And so that's one side of the Iranian political structure that he's trying to push out in public messaging. And then you have the very hardcore militaristic security establishment that is really fighting the war on the battlefield and kind of doing, you know, their very straightforward thing.
Can you make any sense of what the goal of the American and Israeli-led war actually is? What is it that they're after? Because what they say they're after seems to change on a daily basis.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you on which day. Are you talking about today, or was it yesterday, potentially tomorrow? So from the U.S. perspective, it's changed by the day, even depending on who the person is, the president, the vice president, secretary of state, secretary of defense. When, you know, anywhere from just a month ago, locked and loaded to shoot at Iran because of killing protesters, so potentially the right to protest, freedom for Iranians is something that's been mentioned. Certainly the bombs are not bringing any freedom to Iranians, particularly the many many civilians. The civilian toll is very high, including many children. One of the first attacks was on a girls' elementary school in southern Iran. And so that's really out of the question. The nuclear program was something that's been mentioned. But then again, back in June with Operation Midnight Hammer, the U.S. Said that they had obliterated Iran's nuclear program. That statement is still on the website of the White House, that Iran's nuclear program was obliterated as a result of that program less than a year ago. And then the UN nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, has said that Iran wasn't planning to weaponize the program or wasn't anywhere close to weaponizing this program. And so I think if we look at it, maybe focus more on the Israeli side, I think for them it's been more coherent over the past two decades. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has publicly and privately, on the record, off record, been pushing U.S. administration after administration, president after president, to go into the regime change war with Iran. He's been pushing it. And I think the goal from their view is try to weaken Iran as much as possible, potentially even bring it close to a failed state, potentially maybe even multiple states, partition, ethnic divide, civil war, whatever, that weakens this country, that poses no threat to Israel, or if it does, that they can go back in and attack essentially in a mow-the-grass situation that they've been doing with Gaza and then with Lebanon. And I think the U.S. president, the irony is that the president who calls himself the president of peace, who thinks he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize for ending wars, eventually did deliver this big regime change war on Iran after 20-something years.
And he has also said to the Iranian people that, you know, rise up and take over your country. Now is your best opportunity. I'll have your back. And we said that before, I'll have your back. And they went into the streets and did as he said, and there were machine guns where they stood, and he did not have their back. Is it completely delusional to think that unarmed citizens can take on what is essentially a million-strong Iranian military force to overthrow the regime that they've pledged their lives to?
Absolutely. You just described it. I mean, this is a state that has very powerful institutions. It has a monopoly on power, on violence, on arms. It has repressed and cracked down on protests time and again at every cycle, and has used whatever means they thought necessary to crack down and to repress protesters, as we just saw in January within a matter of 2 days. And also, I mean, it's not very clear how bombing from the sky or a regime change aerial campaign is going to help protesters on the ground. And in fact, what we have seen is that it's created the opposite, a rally around the flag among at least some of the gray areas of the population that were on the fence vis-a-vis this regime. This rally around the flag or rally around the homeland effect was created in June. We saw no protests, no uprising, and we saw more unity in Iranian society. And now we're seeing it the same thing even more because of the assassination of the supreme leader, because of this existential threat that's posed against the system. We're seeing the supporters and the base of the regime really growing and really showing up outside. They're on the street every night chanting and rallying and potentially even putting themselves in harm's way of the bombs incoming to show their support for the system in a war that they see as existential and for survival.
Are you surprised at the resilience of the regime?
I'm not. I mean, me and a number of analysts inside the country in here in Washington had been warning that this war is not going to be a cakewalk. This is not going to be even like Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, it's not ancient history. I'm sure your audiences remember Iraq 20 years, Afghanistan 20 years. And at the beginning of those wars, no one was explaining how they're going to turn out. The absolute failures, the billion-dollar cost, blood and treasure. And look how they turned out. Libya, another example with aerial bombardment regime change. Syria, 10 years of civil war. And this is also one of the reasons why the neighbors were all worried and lobbying against this, not just the Arab states and the Persian Gulf, but also the Iraqis, the Turks, even the Egyptians and the continent won over. Everyone understood that the region is just so chaotic that it just can't afford yet another conflict, that the Iranians were also promising to turn into a regional conflict and really spread the pain, and they have done so.
Very good to talk to you, Negar. Thanks so much for your time. That's Negar Mortazavi, Senior Fellow at the Center for International Policy and host of the Iran podcast. So if you have relatives in Iran, I'd be very interested to talk to you. If you've managed to speak to them, I know that communication there is very, very difficult at the moment, has been for a while, but it'd be interesting to hear what they have said to you. We'll also be talking this evening about what you think about the stance of the Prime Minister of this country, whether you think that he has actually played something of a blinder in a very, very difficult circumstance with Donald Trump yelling at his in his ear on the one side and his knowledge of international law restraining his options on the other. Do you think that Keir Starmer has been acting in the national interest by essentially saying no to Donald Trump? 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850, email nick@lbc.co.uk. And if you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone, 0345 6060 973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10, Nick Abbott, LBC.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
This is Taxation Without Representation.
Straight to the point.
You get giddy with all these U-turns.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Lucky he gets up in the morning, really, isn't it?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
BetMGM was born in Vegas. So just like the Cheltenham Festival, we know a thing or two about entertainment. Every ride, every race, every roar. This is Cheltenham Vegas style. Sign up to BetMGM now. Bet £10 and get £40 in free bets. That's right. Bet £10 and get £40 in free bets. Are you ready for the greatest show on turf? BetMGM. It's showtime.
Minimum stake £10. New customers only. Wagering requirements and conditions apply. 18 plus. Please gamble responsibly.
1983 election. She's won a landslide second term.
Police have been deployed to disperse crowds as the poll tax riots escalate.
Credit crunches continuing to spread from the USA.
Britain has left the European Union.
I mean, this goes on. Boris, Liz,
we've
Rishi.
Helped Britain invest through 45 years of change. That's why we're the UK's number one investment and savings platform, trusted by 2 million people. Hargreaves Lansdowne, helping Britain invest for it all. Investment returns vary. For claim verification, visit hl.co.uk.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
So we seem to be being dragged into another Middle East war of questionable legality. And Donald Trump is pretty much insisting on it, ramping up his war of words with Keir Starmer this weekend. Trump said, "We don't need people to join wars after we've already won. But we are joining in by allowing him to use our air bases." It's the latest in a series of attacks by Donald Trump after Keir Starmer chose not to join in on the US and Israel's initial strikes on Iran. And given his background in the law, it's instructive to actually read what the law is. On the question of were the initial strikes by the US and Israel lawful, the Guardian asked a series of legal experts, and the consensus among them was that no, it was not. The Israeli President Isaac Herzog told the Today program that the fact that Iran was planning a bomb was enough to justify the attacks. But it seems to me as though people in America and Israel have said that Iran has been 2 weeks away from having a nuclear bomb for as long as I can remember. Decades. Under Article 51 of the UN Charter, there's a right to self-defense in response to an armed attack. A broader interpretation of international law has been that a state has a right to use force in response to an imminent threat. But the threat appeared to be imminent only because they said it was. A professor of international law and a senior associate research fellow at the Institute of Advanced Legal Studies said, "Even the doctrine of imminent use of force is very controversial. Academics are divided on what it actually means," which sounds like the kind of thing that lawyers would rub their hands with glee at, something that they can argue back and forth for hours on end. But in this case, she said, there doesn't seem to be any evidence of an imminent threat by Iran. So do you think that that Keir Starmer was right in initially refusing to go along with this war, that even Donald Trump's own Secretary of State said the Americans were dragged into by Israel? Marco Rubio said at the beginning of this, about a week or so ago that America had word that Israel was planning to attack, and that America would then expect Iran to respond in kind on American interests. And so America was dragged into bombing first and asking questions later by the Israelis. Of course, Donald Trump claimed to have obliterated Iran's nuclear program last year. And then said that it was a program that needed to be, I don't know, re-obliterated. So it does seem rather confusing. And do you think that, given that, Keir Starmer was right in not dragging us into it? 0345-6060-973. Kevin in Basingstoke says, Trump hasn't got a plan regarding his bombing of Iran any more than the cons and Nigel Farage had a plan for Brexit. Well, we'll talk about Nigel Farage a little bit later and about the possibility of keeping him out of number 10 Downing Street by people voting tactically, but that's to come later on. So given that the initial strike was illegal, do you think that it was in our interests to stay out of it, or should we ally ourselves as much as possible with America, regardless of what they do? I mean, that seems to have been historically our position, a sort of pet, essentially, America's lapdog. They say shoot at something, and we ask for the target. Now, is the UK's position of conducting a defensive operation lawful? Because Keir Starmer seems to be making the distinction between attack and defence, both of which look the same to my eyes. It's lobbing bombs into another country, but one is supposedly to prevent them from attacking us, and the other is just attacking. Essentially, not for the sake of it necessarily, but without any reason for our immediate threat. And on that case, the people at The Guardian asked whether it was legal or not. They said, well, essentially, we don't know. The UK took the unusual step of releasing a summary of its legal position that it is acting in the collective self-defence of regional allies who have requested support, and those will be the countries that Iran has attacked subsequently. And is Iran in breach of international law in its response? Well, having come under attack, Iran is entitled to attack US and Israeli military bases in response, but, as you know, they've gone further than that and hit Dubai and other countries in the area, and they've been described as indiscriminate. And it sort of looks like that, but as we were discussing before, if the top of the military has been taken out, then those lower down start to have control over their own targets, and maybe that's a function of that. Neil says, what comes next? More of the same? Or a counter, a re-migration, so there will be civil unrest as the Islam brothers cry and kill, but unfortunately the point has passed. Whichever path is taken, there will be unrest and loss of life. I understood some of that, Neil. Keith says, Keith in Exeter, it's a bit of a cheek, isn't it? America accusing us of joining of joining wars late. Yeah, I guess you could say that. And Nicholas says, how can a population uprise when they're being bombed? Well, that is one of the most sad aspects of this, is that there's 93 million people in Iran who've been living under a vicious and repressive regime. And I would imagine most of them yearn to be free of him. And Donald Trump's idea that they can just simply wait for the bombing to stop and then go out and topple the regime, who are backed up by about a million well-armed military, is deluded is perhaps not too strong a word. Is it? Does he have any idea what he's doing? I mean, do you think that Donald Trump and the American military have any clue as to what the end result of this might be. He talks of winning, but does he appear to have any idea what winning would actually look like? And given that, it doesn't seem very smart for a country to join another in a war when the country that we would be joining doesn't have any idea what the war is actually for. 0345 6060 973, text 84850, email nick@lbc.co.uk, and if you're on WhatsApp, it's at LBC. Going to take a break for the news, after which the US and Israel have carried out massive airstrikes across Iran for over a week now with no let-up in sight. The unconditional surrender demanded from the White House is not forthcoming, so what possible military objectives remain? 10:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
Iran has chosen a new supreme leader, despite Donald Trump saying numerous times his appointment would be unacceptable. Mashaba Khamenei is a mid-ranking cleric. He is also the son of the late Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The White House press secretary has refused to rule out creating a new draft to send Americans to fight in Iran. Caroline Levitt says the measure is not part of the current plan right now. And arrests have been made after what police have called the shameful behaviour of some supporters at a Scottish Cup quarter-final match. It featured Glasgow Rangers and Celtic and was being held at Ibrox. LBC weather, cloudy for most of the night with patchy rain moving north. Chilly where the cloud does break with a low of around 5 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Chase is the digital bank that gives you 1% cash back on groceries.
So, can I get cash back on cake mix?
Indeed.
And icing?
Yep.
And sprinkles?
Sure.
And candles?
Yeah, and you can turn all that cash back into a nice birthday treat.
How do you know it's my birthday?
Just a hunch. Get 1% cash back on groceries, fuel and everyday transport when you spend with Chase. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. 1% cash back on this debit card spending for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Eligibility and exceptions apply. May be changed or withdrawn.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's talk to former US Navy intelligence officer and best-selling author Malcolm Nance, who joins us on the line now. Hello, Malcolm.
Good evening.
The National Intelligence Council, as you know, composed of veteran analysts who produce classified assessments meant to represent the collective wisdom of Washington's 18 intelligence agencies. And a report by the National Intelligence Council found that even a large-scale assault on Iran launched by the United States would be unlikely to oust the Islamic Republic's entrenched military and clerical establishment. Would you agree with that?
Well, absolutely. And in fact, we're going to find this out the hard way. The problem with the administration, with the Trump administration, is they do not process intelligence, advice, or information that comes from professionals, lifelong intelligence professionals, the way any other president does. And technically, they ignore it. You might also notice that that was the opinion of the National Intelligence Council. But the director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, someone who was unqualified to be in that job, is absolutely absent from all talk, decision-making, and discussion with regards to the operations that are going on in Iran. But too late. We are now engaged in Iran. We are going to do what we do best, which is we're going to be able to drop bombs and destroy aircraft, sink a relatively easy Navy to sink. And where things are going to get difficult, is protecting our allies. You've already seen them struck. In fact, you know, for the British, who are now about to lead a task force along with the French and the Italians off of Cyprus, the cruise missile that struck Cyprus did not strike just RAF Akrotiri. It struck the U-2 spy plane hangar at RAF Akrotiri. So the Iranians had some very precise strategic intelligence about exactly where U.S. Theater-level intelligence collectors were. So it's going to get difficult from here, and the Iranians have a vote on how long this actually will last.
Trump's people keep saying that he's been very, very clear about his goals. Do you think he has?
Not at all. I've heard about 10 different goals within the last 9 days. They can't seem to keep their stories straight, and not one of those goals is achievable. The first one initially was that they wanted regime change in support of popular uprising and expected the Iranian people to uprise. Well, they had that chance in January and they blew it, which really was the culmination of 47 years of U.S. intelligence and military operations preparing for a moment like this where they could have supported a popular uprising, a color revolution that could have swept the regime. At least brought the regime into challenge, because that would have led to a civil war, right? The regime is not just going to disappear. The second one was supposedly getting rid of all ballistic missile and nuclear materials and degrading their ballistic missile production. They did that, but the nuclear materials, we were told last year, were buried, in the Natanz of the Fordow facility, even though it's pretty obvious the Iranians could easily get them out. Now they want to try to find them again from the air. You can't do it from the air. You can just drop bombs. I could just go on and on. But, originally they didn't want boots on the ground. Now they want boots on the ground. We're finding all of our allies in the region are at war, are being bombarded, even so far, as I said, all the way out to Cyprus. So whatever the reason is, it doesn't matter. Because the United States, unless we physically invade or unless we can start up a popular uprising that will sweep away the 25 million regime loyalists and admirers, we will end up bombing like we did in Iraq for 10 years, right? We'll fly over it every day. We'll dominate the airspace. We'll drop bombs. And that will not change the Iranian Revolutionary Guardsmen on the street corner drinking tea and eating dates.
It's also going to impact the American voter, who I don't think is very keen on this war to start with. And when the bodies start coming back, as they already have, then I would imagine that that's going to that's going to cement their resistance to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's only 27% approval on this war. And that includes Republicans. Now, amongst Republicans, they love Donald Trump, right? They're almost in a cult-like worship of Donald Trump. But they know now that he president of peace, no long-term wars. This is the literal definition. And I know Americans like to use the word literal, but this is the definition of a forever war. Because unless we just draw the line, declare victory, stop doing airstrikes, we will be forced to continue doing airstrikes every day, all day, in full cooperation of the Israelis, who the U.S. Air Force and the Israelis are essentially one team. Trump called them Pence have called them an allied team. The Israelis, starting tonight, are going to try to kill, Mujtaba Khamenei, the son of Ali Khamenei, the previous Ayatollah, right, supreme leader of the country. They can keep doing that forever. But there are a number of people. I mean, there's 88 people in the advisory council. You would have to kill your way all the way through the Shia Islam imamate to not find a leader. That country will not be rudderless. But it won't change the day-to-day affairs of 93 million people. And we haven't even seen some of the capabilities that we know the Iranians have. Asymmetric warfare capabilities, commandos, small boats, anti-ship missiles, sea mines, all those things that we have been waiting, almost 40 years for. I mean, and if they manifest themselves, they're going to manifest themselves in a dramatic way.
It seems that the Iranians have more of a plan for this war than the Americans do.
Oh, Gosh, I'm gonna full disclosure to your audience here. I'm 64 years old. The first time I went to the Arabian Gulf and engaged in combat, I was 26 years old. That was back in the mid 1980s, when the Iranians were mining the Persian Gulf. The Iran-Iraq war was going on in full. You know, all the places that we are fighting in today or dealing with today, this mission has been the same ever since the 1979 Islamic Revolution that put, the clerics into power. Both sides have been preparing for this for 47 years. It's just that last June, those missile strikes on the, you know, the bomb strikes on the nuclear plants, that was 25 years of bomb development that was done, right? We blew up those sites and the material got away. They won't be able to use centrifuges. They won't be able to build ballistic missiles, but they have hundreds and hundreds of them. The purpose of all of this is regime survival for Iran and nothing else. Ask the Taliban, you know, what it's like to receive unconditional surrender and to be utterly defeated by the United States. You know, they're asking that while smoking a hookah and having a second coffee.
If America did put, like as the phrase goes, boots on the ground, if they sent the military in, it's going to be anything but a cakewalk, isn't it?
Well, that just depends. I mean, I just wrote a Substack. I have a Substack called Special Intelligence, and where I analyze in an article called 1001 Arabian Nightmares, just how bad it could get. And the kind of raid missions that I think they're talking about are, one, raids, like using a Marine Amphibious Task Force and landing at some place like, Jask Island or Kishem Island, Larak or Hormuz, these small islands, and then doing an amphibious demonstration, right? Essentially landing to go down, blow things up, and come off so that they can say we use the Marine Corps. Or there's been talk in the news about Kark Island. This is a place I've been dealing with since 1985, almost, nonstop. It's Iran's largest oil terminal in the north, but it is flat. It's 25 kilometers from the mainland. The mountains above it look straight down onto it. If we land on it, all we can do is blow it up. But if we try to take it, they're just going to bombard us day and night. So we're going to do raids that go in, blow things up, go out. It'll look cool. It'll be fun. What they call bombs, guns, and helicopter rides. It will not contribute anything except to the rise of the end of the global economic oil market, because Kark Island is a huge transshipment, which means that oil from Iran is not going to get out ever, so long as we do it. And it will impact your gas prices, oil production, microchip production in South Korea. This could really break the economic order. And as a military guy, my job is to advise you not to do anything stupid. And stupid is abounding everywhere.
As a military guy, what do you make of the Secretary for War, Pete Hegseth?
He's a moron. No, really. Okay, full disclosure, right? I did 20 years in the Navy, intelligence support, contractor after that. My family comes from a legacy of 150 years nonstop military service from the Civil War to a few years ago. And he is the equivalent of an Army infantry captain. He was a reserve, not even a reservist. He was a National Guardsman. And he did, went out and volunteered to go to Afghanistan. Yay for him. He is not qualified to be the leader of the largest war machine in history. Doesn't know what he's doing. And he's not smart enough to know that he should pick people that do know what they're doing. He's a cheerleader. All he's missing is a megaphone that says, yay, war.
So has Trump surrounded Hegseth with people that know what they're doing, even if Hegseth himself has not appointed people who know what they're doing?
Yeah, the only person that's really, sort of surprised me is General Kane. General Kane was a three-star general, Air Force Special Operations Command, was known to have, greeted Trump wearing a MAGA hat, which is absolutely verboten in uniform, said he would, kill for Trump. Trump brought him in, and he is now the voice of reason. Our force is going to do what they do. We are excellent at the delivery of ordnance, complex operations. We are not good at being the, you know, the stick for politicians that really don't know what they want. This is folly. We're going to have to build an off-ramp here, or someone's going to give us an off-ramp. Like the Chinese may come in and act as the adults in the room. They may say, hey, we're going to start flying, you know, people and resources into Iran. Stop bombing. Or they may send over a naval task force, and they may start escorting ships in and out of the Arabian Gulf, Persian Gulf. And Iran goes, oh, we're not going to do anything with them. They're awesome. And then they show up and look like the real stability force in the region. It would be the end of America's ability, you know, America's presence in the Persian Gulf permanently. Because I don't think anyone's going to allow us to have a base over there anymore.
One thing that we've sort of forgotten about in all this is what's happening in Ukraine. And I believe you were in Ukraine recently. What can you tell us about what you saw there?
Well, full disclosure, I was actually a member of the Ukrainian army. I was a member of the International Legion, you know, 1st Battalion, 3rd Battalion, International Legion. And I fought the Russians at the Kharkiv front. You know, I just find it absolutely fascinating that the Ukraine scenario, you know, situation has come full circle for the United States. First off, President Zelensky truly is the Churchill of our times. He is maintaining his country, and he now has a government in the United States that is just absolutely hostile to Ukraine, and madly in love with getting access to the, you know, potentially $1 trillion or $2 trillion of Russian money that's frozen into sanctions. But now the United States needs Ukraine. They develop drone interceptors. Kuwait just met with Ukrainians and are contracting for 20,000 Ukrainian Shahed drone interceptors. Ukraine has been hit with 50,000 Shahed drones in the last 5 years. Iran has an inventory of 80,000 right now, depending on what's been destroyed or not. And they haven't unleashed them yet.
What do you make of the talk from America of unembargoing Russian oil?
Yeah, well, this has been the plan all the way from the beginning. Trump has hinted at this. Look, I've written 4 books about the Trump administration and their relationships with Russia, Russian intelligence, and, you know, the human intelligence officer, that is Vladimir Putin. He knows a sucker when he sees it. You know, Trump is madly in love with that man. At least that's what the former prime minister of Australia said. And, you know, that he understands that Trump is easily manipulable. And so long as he looks like a winner and America gets access, not America, Donald Trump and his family get access to money, which is why Trump sent a real estate negotiator to do all of his deals with Putin. Putin will play him along. He'll give him money. You know, he gives him the prestige that he wants. But he has to give Vladimir Putin something in return, and that's Ukraine. And Trump has tried to literally negotiate giving away 20% of Ukraine, including parts of Ukraine that aren't even under Russian control. Never going to happen. So, you know, I mean, this is a story that's going to go on forever. But, you know, Scott Bessent floating that they want to raise ease sanctions to allow Russia to sell oil to India, of oil that was sanctioned. We literally just saved the Russian economy with this war. Oil in Russia was $37 a barrel. Now it's going, I believe oil, you know, Brent crude broke $100 today per barrel. Osama bin Laden said it should be 140. The Kuwaitis are predicting $150. So Russia will be able to fight this war a lot longer now. But then again, you know, who knows what's going to go on in the Arabian Gulf and the Eastern Mediterranean?
Well, yes.
That could offset that.
And because of all of the above that you just said, will Russia then be in a position, thanks to America, to fight America on behalf of Iran?
No. I got to tell your audience, I have studied Russia forever. I mean, since my teens back in the Cold War, there is no Russian army now. Whatever's in Ukraine is all they have. They have no tanks. Almost the entire inventory of Russian tanks have been destroyed. They're bringing tanks out from the 1950s to use as mobile artillery posts. Drones have devastated them. They literally came in on horses, you know, a couple of months ago. They don't have an army to invade Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. But if this war stops, Russia gains control of parts of Ukraine, in 5 years, they could rebuild an army that could go to war with parts of NATO. But right now, the Polish could destroy the what remains of the Russian army and probably take Moscow. That it is a shell of its old Soviet self.
Very good to talk to you, Malcolm. That was fascinating. Malcolm Nance, former U.S. Navy intelligence officer and best-selling author. Malcolm Nance. So what are your thoughts on that and everything else that you've been hearing on the news over the past few days? And particularly, I'm interested in what you think of the Prime Minister's response to all of this, because he has been getting criticism from the right-wing political parties in this country, and certainly from Donald Trump. And yet, what he's done seems to be in sort of concert with most of the people in this country. Most of the opinion polling suggests that we don't want any part of this. How about you? 0345-6060-973.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As drones and missiles attack targets across the Middle East, the UK's response has been shameful at best. The government failed to get its first evacuation flight off the ground.
There was an issue with the checking in the airport side because it was a charter flight. The pilot then ran out of working hours.
They refused to proscribe the IRGC as a terrorist organisation.
We can't proscribe them under current terror legislation because there's a gap in terror legislation.
Is it any wonder President Trump has waged his own war of words at Sir Keir Starmer?
This is not the age of Churchill.
As the conflict continues in the Gulf, is it time for the Prime Minister to step up for the sake of the so-called special relationship?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum again.
May Lucas stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays, backing your future.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You. And when it comes to getting aircon into London's hot and stuffy apartments and listed buildings, I'm the daddy. For years, Cool You have supplied and installed fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss and no external condensers. So head to coolyou.london today. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
We are talking about the continuing war in Iran and the ramifications for the world economy. We'll be discussing a little later on, and whether you think our Prime Minister has been treading a rather difficult line, very well or not, is what I'm particularly interested in. Highbury. Hello, Phil.
Evening, Nick. It's a joy to speak. It's the first time, and I've listened over many years. So,
thanks.
It's a compliment, indeed. Interesting, to add to the conversation, Trump has just said, or recently said, that the US have won the war. But I don't think Iran are aware of that.
I'm not sure that Trump is aware of it.
Well, okay, let's kind of move on, because I think Trump's not aware of a lot of things. The Iranian ambassador has now warned the UK to be very, quote, careful about further involvement in the war. David Petraeus, who's a general of some note, has previously said that this is not going to be a short-lived experience. And the bottom line here for me is a normal resident, if you like, a normal person of the UK, is that if international law, because I deal with law, if international law has any relevance at all, then surely it should be taken account of. And at the moment, we seem to have people in our own government and opposition, to an extent, who are saying that we should ignore it.
I think the people in the opposition are just scoring political points. If they were in power, then I'm not sure they would have done anything much different than what we've seen from Keir Starmer. I mean, if the law says that this war is illegal, then we shouldn't have anything to do with it, surely.
I agree. If we have boundaries now, with the Iraq situation, going back to Tony Blair, we went through a whole protocol, even though perhaps the messaging was incorrect and we were not properly informed. We at least went through process. I see no process here. All I see is that somebody has been perhaps persuaded, encouraged by another, Mr. Netanyahu, to proceed alongside. And we've been dragged along. Now, ultimately, our dragging is our responsibility. We have a choice. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't become involved when it's a question of defending our own bases and people. What I'm saying is that I can't actually see, as a viewer, an end to this, because the Iranians have just said that Trump's view of the outcome is a dream.
Well, it's a dream that seems to be changing on a daily basis. It doesn't make any sense to me to join in any kind of fight if the people that we're joining don't know what they're fighting for.
The exit strategy was what was complained about as regards to the Iraq war, and the fact that there was none. And if you don't know where you want to end up, then why would you commence in the first place? And if we are going to become part of the military police of the world, then we have to expect and understand what that means, and we can't deal with it. So, unfortunately, if in a conversation like this, we can sit down and say, well, look, I don't see any reasonable consequence, any reason for doing what we're currently doing, and certainly supporting the Americans, then why are our government acceding so?
Right. Well, I think we're being dragged into it partly because the Iranians have attacked our interests, but they've only done that because they were attacked in the first place. And I think America only joined in the attack because they heard that the Israelis were going to attack. And the Americans, this is what Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, said. He said that the Israelis made it clear that they were going to attack, and the Americans expected that their interests would then in turn be attacked by Iran, so they wanted to get the hits in first. So,
agreed.
So it appears as though America has been dragged into it with no clue as to why on what a win would look like, and we are now being dragged into it because we are joined at the hip with America.
And at the backdrop of this is that the negotiations that were occurring, I think on the Thursday, regarding the nuclear enrichment, were seemingly making progress.
Yes, they were. They were getting back to the place that we used to have before Donald Trump ripped up the nuclear proliferation deal when he came into office, because it had, I imagine, because it had Barack Obama's signature on it.
And
ever since, he's been trying to get back to what we originally had, which, by all accounts, was working just fine.
In which case, then, if history is at all important, then how we react going forward and how complicit we are. And I'm not saying that we should not defend what is our own, because we must do. That's our obligation. That's the government's obligation, to protect its own people. But if we find ourselves in a position that we can simply not extricate ourselves from, then surely that is ignoring the history of what's gone beforehand. Because really, after 20-odd years of the Iraqi situation, was that a good decision? Was that our decision to make, given all the so-called caveats and care that we took over entering, regardless of the 45 minutes? We don't have that here now. We have nothing apart from being told that we're no longer our real allies or the original allies because we haven't supported them in the way somebody has expected us to do so. And I think that's very disappointing because ultimately it's put Starmer under a huge amount of pressure. And I'm very personally disappointed in much of our media ignoring the fact that law has been breached, international law has been breached, and simply saying we are no longer patriotic. And somebody who once said the most disgraceful act of non-patriotism ever. And I would look to those people and who funds them, to be honest. If you want to find out who's responsible, follow the money.
Yeah.
Always follow the money.
I think that's about right. All right. Good talk to you, Phil. Thanks for that. More of your thoughts on this to come. And as the US and Israel light up the skies over Iran with Operation Epic Fury, far less furious was Keir Starmer. This is not Winston Churchill that we're dealing with, said Trump, and the Board of Peace appointee Tony Blair himself rebuked Starmer for not backing the president. So as the first of the Royal Navy's ships limp out of Portsmouth later in the week, is it just too convenient to say that the PM is learning the lessons from Iraq? Is our military prepared at all for conflict? 0345-6060-973. Text 84850. Email nicka@lbc.co.uk. And if you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. Iran has chosen a new supreme leader despite warnings from Donald Trump his appointment would be unacceptable. Mashaba Khamenei is taking over from his father, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, following his death. Nega Mortazavi from the Iran podcast has been talking to Nick Abbott on LBC. She says some Iranians may be concerned about his appointment.
We knew before the killing assassination of his father that it was implied somewhat that his father was actually not in big favor. Favor of him becoming the successor because this would essentially reenact a view of monarchy, of power being passed on from father to son, something the Islamic Republic tried to end, a millennia of monarchy in the 1979 revolution.
Mashaba Khamenei will now play a central role in Iran's wartime planning. The country's powerful Revolutionary Guard will also have to answer to him. But the former US Navy intelligence officer Malcolm Nance has been telling LBC the appointment won't actually change that much.
The Israelis, starting tonight, are going to try to kill, you know, Mujtaba Khamenei, the son of Ali Khamenei. They can keep doing that forever. But there are a number of people. I mean, you know, there's 88 people in the advisory council. You would have to kill your way all the way through the Shia Islam imamate to not find a leader.
The Foreign Office has withdrawn some of its staff and dependents from Lebanon. It says the measures being taken as a precaution. Lebanon says nearly 400 people have died during a week of conflict between Hezbollah there and Israel. Rail passengers in Glasgow are facing major disruption because of a fire. It began near the city's central station. LBC's Alan Zazinski has been at the scene this evening.
The flames are absolutely massive, I can tell you that. This is one of the worst fires I've seen here in Glasgow since the now infamous School of Art fire here a few years ago. There is a huge plume of smoke going right up into the air, high above the city centre. Every 10 minutes or so as well, parts of the building are actually collapsing.
And the Home Office says it will bring together specialists to tackle scammers from overseas and protect the public. It says the police, intelligence agencies, banks, mobile networks and major tech companies will become part of the new online crime centre. LBC weather, cloudy for much of the night with patchy rain moving northwards. It'll be chilly as well when the cloud does break and we'll see a low of around 5 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Donald Trump has ramped up his war of words with Keir Starmer. Trump said, "We don't need people that join wars after we've already won." This marks the latest in a series of attacks by Trump after Starmer chose not to join in on the US and Israel's initial strikes on Iran. The Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper was talking about this. She hit back at the US president, said that Starmer's government deals with substance, not social media posts. She said, "That's one of the things I've learned in doing this job, and that's what we need to concentrate on." She said the substance here is that the UK did not provide support for the initial US and Israel strikes. That's because Starmer took the decision that it was not in the UK's national interest to do so, not in accordance with our values. We wanted continued diplomatic negotiations to continue, and I don't underestimate how difficult those were, because we were involved in providing support for those negotiations, and we wanted that to continue, so said the Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper. Professor Anthony Glees is a security expert at the University of Buckingham, and he joins us on the line to discuss this now. Good evening, Professor.
Good evening, Nick.
Well, first of all, what's your impression of Keir Starmer's approach to this so far?
Well, I think it's been awful, to be honest. I mean, I feel very sorry for him. I think he's a decent man, and he's been dealt a horrible pack of cards, a hand of cards. And there's no doubt in my mind that any British Prime Minister faced with the cards that he's been dealt would have found it very difficult to navigate a safe path through the grenades President Trump has been lobbing at us really ever since this war started. However, the fact is that Sir Keir is the Prime Minister and he hasn't navigated a safe course. He also hasn't done the things that he ought to have done, knowing as he did do right at the beginning of February, we think about the 11th of February, he was told that an attack was highly likely. And at that time, he should have sent a destroyer, possibly even the aircraft carrier, the Prince of Wales, providing it was in fit condition to make the trip to the Mediterranean, because, of course, it takes 2 weeks or more for it to get there, and it needs various other boats round it to protect it. So there are things that he should have done, because we know from the Iranian drones, and it was drones, we're told, at least two drones, possibly four, launched towards the two RAF bases on Cyprus. We should never forget there are two RAF bases there. One at Akrotiri, which we run totally by ourselves. And then there's the second one at Aquileia that we share with the NSA, the American Intelligence Agency. They pay 50% of the cost of that. It's the special relationship made real, if you will. So we were involved in the war, even if we didn't want to be. And what a politician has to do is to deal with the world the way it is, not the way he would like it to be.
Yes, but you can understand his reticence, particularly being the leader of the Labour Party, to get involved in another Middle East war with questionable legality.
Well, one has every sympathy for that. I mean, this is it's a war of choice where increasingly frail thinking Trump. I mean, he is an old man, and old men can behave in strange and rigid ways. He chose to take up the prompt given to him by Netanyahu. Again, it seems obvious that when Netanyahu visited Trump about a fortnight ago, this war was finally agreed on because there was an opportunity to get rid of the Ayatollahs, and Trump fell for it hook, line, and sinker. Now, most serious people think it's a lousy idea. Yes, the Iranian Ayatollahs, they're the bad side of evil. Yes, they do us harm here in the United Kingdom, let alone in the Middle East and to our wider interests. But to do what Trump is doing right now, does not only stand a good chance of not getting rid of the Ayatollahs and not getting rid of the Islamists who run Iran, but spreading chaos and also economic catastrophe literally all around the world. So Trump should not have done what he did. Wily Netanyahu, if he'd had any, you know, decency, I suppose, he would not have prompted Trump to join him on this adventure. But it is what they did, and because of our special relationship, a security relationship, and an intelligence sharing relationship, as I say, made real by the joint base in Cyprus at Kelia, that shows that we're part of it. And for me, and I think a number of other people, the bottom line here is we are too weak in this country. We are too weak to stand on our own feet, on together with the Europeans on European ground. We can't stand on our own. We need the Americans if push comes to shove with Putin, who is threat number one. And in that sense, Tony Blair is absolutely bang to rights. We can't look to America to help us if we say we want nothing to do with America. Now, to do him justice, it looks as if Sir Keir has realized this. And we're told he had a phone chat with President Trump this evening, and that they agreed that they would collaborate, and I'm quoting here, in support of self-defense of partners in the region. That sounds very much like Sir Keir talking there, and it is a way of saying, we messed up big time. So we don't come out of this well, but that's because we're weak, and we're weak. That's not Sir Keir's fault. It is the fault of every prime minister and every chancellor we've had for the past 20 years.
But you seem, forgive me, you seem to be saying two things. One, that the war is misplaced, to put it mildly, and the other, that we should have gone along with it. I mean, friends don't let friends drive drunk. So if America is our friend, then they shouldn't be abusing us for not following us on this A, illegal, B, a war that doesn't seem to have any purpose or any goal that anybody has been able to elucidate on. It seems like an insane game that they're playing. Why on earth is it in our interest to just blindly follow whatever they say?
Well, of course, you're absolutely right. It's not in our interest to blindly follow Israel and America into this war of choice, this war of chaos. Nobody believes that Iran was about to mount an attack against America or Israel. All the American versions are sort of eyewash, frankly. Yes, we should not have joined in the war, but we could not deny to the Americans the use of our bases, which we've agreed upon as their responsibility. We could not deny them that use because they are our allies, and it's what allies do. So we didn't have to take part. We shouldn't take part, even if the best thing now were that all the Ayatollahs would disappear. It's not going to happen like that. No, we were absolutely right not to have anything to do with the fighting, but we were absolutely wrong not to say we will provide defense for our allies and partners in the region. And if you want to use our air bases, that's fine. You can use them, your planes, your ammunition, not ours.
Well, you mentioned that we are essentially weak without the Americans' military might behind us, but would it be more in our interests to get closer to our European allies? Because the leaders of Spain, Germany, France, even Italy have all said no to joining Donald Trump in this war. They don't want anything to do with it. So would it perhaps be more in our interests to join them than Trump?
Well, I think we should be working together with our European partners, particularly with France and particularly with Germany. I don't think we should follow the Spanish line here, and people will know perhaps that Spain has always been reluctant to increase spending on defence, and the Italians are sort of kind of a law unto their own, but when push comes to shove, they too are very worried about the threat posed by Russia under Putin to all of Europe. So, yes, we should be working with those European allies that think as we do. I mean, if you, you know, you talk of European allies, look at how President Macron has played this. He has said, we think this war is illegal. We think it's going to cause chaos. It is not in our interest. However, we have partners in the Gulf and we need to defend them from Iranians who are lobbing weapons all over the place. I mean, it's a, turn this into a much wider war than it should have been, because Iran is taking it out on those countries in the Gulf who are our allies and partners. The Charles de Gaulle is sent there and can protect. I mean, for goodness sake, we have to rely on the French at the moment to provide proper protection for our two bases in Cyprus. So, yes, we should be working together, but it comes back to the judgment of the Prime Minister. And many will fear that the speed with which he said no to Trump was motivated not by thoughtful reflection on our national interests, as Yvette Cooper put it, but what his Labour backbenchers might say. Nobody in their right mind wants to repeat Tony Blair's errors in 2002 and 2003. The chaos that the attack on Iraq caused. Nobody wants to repeat that. But as long as we're tied to America's apron strings when it comes to our security from Putin, not just if Putin gets a win in Ukraine, but because of the unfreezing of the Arctic, also from the frozen north, where Norway and Britain is at a number one in the firing line. If we want America to protect us, we can't say to America, get lost, you're not our friend any longer. Even if Trump has done his level best to try to destroy the special relationship, and he has done, we can't let him go. We can't let him get off that easily, because it is not in our national interest to do so. Yvette Cooper is right. This is about our national interest, but our national interest means that we have to work with the grain of America, even if we don't like it, even if we think it's wrong, until we can stand with our fellow Europeans on our own feet. And the sooner that happens, the better. But at the moment, we're in no position to that. I mean, our defensive position in the UK is absolutely awful. If there were another Falklands War, for example, I doubt that we could do what we did all those years ago when Argentina invaded the Falklands. It is that bad.
Yes, I think military spending went down 20% in the first 10 years that the Tories took power, and then it started to trickle back up again. But it takes an awful long time to fix something. It's certainly longer to fix something that's broken than to break it in the first place.
Well, excuse me, I just think you could move very much faster. I mean, famously, abusive Trump, like an abusive husband, said to his wife, Starmer, you're no Churchill. Well, that is true. Starmer is no Churchill, but Trump is no Churchill either. And, you know, Trump is the man who discovered he had a spur in his foot, a bone in his foot, so he couldn't do military service. Churchill fought in two wars, the Boer War and the First World War, very bravely. He knew what it meant to send men into the battlefield. And Churchill also was keen that his sons and relations fought in the Second World War at great danger to themselves. And if anybody thinks Baron Trump's going to be off to the Middle East anytime soon, they've got another thing coming. So we do know all of that, but we still have to deal with the man who is the most powerful man in the world. We cannot afford to get on the wrong side of him.
Very good to talk to you, Professor. Thanks so much for your time. That's Professor Anthony Gleese, security expert at the University of Buckingham. It's a bit difficult not getting on his wrong side, though, isn't it? Because his wrong side is seems to be changing every day. It's just very difficult to know what to do. I mean, if I were running the country, I'd want as little to do with him as possible. But I suppose that's not where we are. I mean, Trump says that he doesn't need our help with the war that he's already won. So why is the bombing continuing? Why does America need our air bases to launch from? And why is he talking about sending in American troops? So he hasn't already won it. And what do you make of Keir Starmer's position on this? Because Keir Starmer makes a differentiation, as far as legal terms are concerned, between attacking strikes and so-called defensive strikes. Is there a difference? And what do you make of Tony Blair? His insistence that Keir Starmer should have supported the US in a Middle East war based on flawed intel about them acquiring weapons of mass destruction, which appears to go against international law. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
LBC. Time's running out for your chance to win £1 million with the birthday draw. Enter by midnight tonight at thebirthdaydraw.com. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on her social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays, backing your future.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
We're talking about what's going on in Iran and whether we should be close or as far away as possible from Donald Trump. Jerry in Leytonstone says, given Trump's past record of acting on a whim, he will do to Iran what happened in Afghanistan by pulling out, then leave behind the chaos for others to deal with. Sadly, that chaos is not measured in material damage, but thousands of human lives, which mean nothing to him. He's showing the world he can do whatever he wants with no accountability. Wake up, America, and smell the coffee. Sheffield. Hello, Ali.
Hi there. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Nick, hi. First of all, I just want to tell you something about myself. I've been an activist for the last 40 years. Against the illegal regime in Iran and supporting the National Council of Resistance of Iran. And I think we have to look at it in a different way because the policy of appeasement from the Western countries toward Iran has been so long that caused the mullahs think as a green light for them to do whatever they like from, you know, creating proxies all over the Middle East, from Lebanon to Palestine to Hamas, Hezbollah, Houthis in Yemen, and in Syria, the disaster which they created in Syria and Iraq as well, which has been shabby. And now, even now, after they apologizing to the West, to the Gulf countries,
yeah,
they still start bombing them. But I'm not for the Trump, and I'm not supporting the war because I think the war is not the answer to the problem in Middle East.
Well, what do you think? What do you think is? What do you think is? Sorry to interrupt, but what do you think is the answer?
I'm listening.
Okay, well, we talked over each other. What do you think is the answer?
Well, I think being firm toward a regime which is wild and not have respect for any international laws. You know, as I said, for the last 40 years, the policy of appeasement by the West has given basically the mullahs in Iran the green light, and they have done whatever they wanted to do. They killed, Americans in Lebanon, 250 soldiers of American soldiers were bombed. They went to Iraq and did a side bombing for against British and American roadside bombing. And everybody closed their eyes toward these things which happened. And a lot of Iranians have been killed. And, you know, just recently, as you know, Nick, just recently we have about, they say about 3,500, some figures said about 30,000 people were massacred. In
yes,
Iran.
That's right.
And yet again, Starmer is waiting for what to happen to put IRGC in the terrorist list. For example.
But what difference would that make?
Well, the difference it makes, because everything in Iran run by IRGC, and by putting that entity in the terrorist list, that makes the economical situation not very favorable for the IRGC. And also, the sanction hasn't been that strong to stop the Iranian oil to be traveling all over the world and be sold for, a fraction of the price.
But I thought that the sanctions that America was levying on Iran had pretty much crippled their economy, and that's why the people were protesting in the streets in the first place. Yeah. And that precipitated Donald Trump saying, well, just hang on, wait indoors while we bomb stuff, and then you can come out and take over the regime. But that's delusional thinking, isn't it?
I said, Nick, I'm not for the war. I don't think the answer for the problem which we have in the Middle East is war.
Right.
We have done it once in Iraq, and look what we got.
But how do you get rid of that regime?
Stop the policy of appeasement. That's what they have to do. The Western country have appeased the regime for the last 47 years. I've been an activist for 40 years, and I've been telling many politicians, talking to many politicians. I'm a supporter of National Council of Resistance of Iran. Mrs. Maryam Rajavi 10-point plan is put a clear plan for resistance, which is in Iran, to provide that freedom and democracy which the Iranian people need, not bombing the country, destroying all the infrastructure of the country, and then what the people are going to do, how are they going to manage? The people are dying from the regime's by IRGC, and then dying from bombing by Americans and Israelis. This is not the answer. The answer is stop appeasement. And look out for the organized resistance, NCRI, National Council of Resistance, and Mrs. Maryam Rajavi 10-point plan. That's the answer. Many, many thousands of politicians have supported her. Many, many thousands of, distinguished people have supported her. But yet again, we don't even hear it. Nothing in the media, nothing in the, from politicians in this country or anywhere else, to how grateful this plan are.
Right, and for those that, including myself, that are unfamiliar with this 10-point plan, could you just summarize it for us?
Yes. Well, what Mrs. Maryam Rajavi has announced recently is not recently, it's been going on for quite a while, is non-nuclear weapons Iran, separate religion from state, separation of religion from state,
free and fair elections, right?
The fair elections,
right? But how do you achieve that, how do you achieve any of that without getting rid of the regime in the first place?
Yeah, but as I said, the resistance movement have been going on for the last 50 years, Nick.
With no success. So, I mean, I'm not supporting what's happening at all, but at least it's probably not the right phrase at all, but it is something different, and the intention, at least superficially, it seems to be to get rid of the regime. It seems impossible to think that an unarmed population could rise up and get rid of a regime that is backed up by heavily armed people, the number about a million strong.
But Nick, the Iranian people have shown for so many years by protesting and coming to the street, although unarmed, And yet again, we haven't had any support from Western countries.
I don't know what you mean by support. You want troops in there?
No. We don't want any troops. I mean, Mrs. Maria Brejovic Carrieri put it to every country in the world that we don't need war, we don't need appeasement.
To get rid of the Iranian regime, you're going to have some kind of violent uprising. They're not just going to pack their bags and go. So how are you going to do that?
Absolutely not. I agree with you. Absolutely not. But the resistance have been there for, as I said, 40 years. And they were fighting the regime in every way of they could. Just a week before the American attack,
there were protests in the street as far as they were complaining about the economy, which is partly ruined because of the American sanctions. I get that. I'm just going to have to leave it there, Ali, because I've just run out of time on that. But I appreciate your call. Thanks. 0345-6060-973. You can text 84850, email nick@lbc.co.uk. And if you are on WhatsApp, then it is the same number as the phone. Shall we continue this after the news? I'm just asking my producer. It's a thumbs up. Okay, those are the people that are waiting to talk about this. And then I'll take your calls after this news update with Tim Daly.
Iran has announced the son of the late Ayatollah Ali Khamenei will be the country's new supreme leader. Mashaba Khamenei is a mid-ranking cleric with close ties to the Revolutionary Guards. President Trump is claiming oil prices will drop rapidly once the nuclear threat posed by Iran is over. Writing this evening, he says the rises are a very small price to pay for the USA plus world safety and peace. And the Home Office says it will bring together specialists to tackle scammers from overseas and protect the public. It says they'll include banks, mobile networks and major tech firms and will become part of the new online crime center. LBC weather, cloudy for most of the night with patchy rain moving north, chilly where the cloud does break and a low of around 5 degrees.
LBC.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
Think of a date that's special to you. Now imagine if that date won you a life-changing £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight tonight and your special date could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
So Iran has chosen a new leader, apparently. Israel says they're going to kill whoever it happens to be. And the United States say that they have both won the war and that the war is continuing. And the goals of the war seem to change depending on the direction of the wind. Should we have anything to do with any of this? 0345-6060-973. East Yorkshire. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Nick. The only person who's been coherent that you've had on tonight was that American serviceman who went through it slowly, carefully, completely logically, and explained what would happen. So Starmer is absolutely correct so far to keep us as far out of it as he can. He is, let's look at it, let's say I'm a pragmatist. transactional, Hobbesian sort of person. Right, forget the legal side, forget the moral side. The one thing you do not want to be is on the losing side. And Trump is going to lose this. The last thing we should do is throw a lot in. And you get Farage, Tice, Badenoch, mocking Starmer, saying, oh, you're a coward. The Australians backed Trump immediately. Well, think of Vietnam. The Americans said, come on, lads, let's get in. We said no. The Australians said yes. 3,000 casualties, 500 dead Australians. How did that go? And why are they mocking Starmer?
Well, they're knocking Starmer for political points. And Farage is whispering sweet nothings in Donald Trump's ear because I don't really know why. Because Donald Trump is not very popular in this country. And if Farage thinks they're getting closer to him and getting Trump's unique aroma all over him is going to make him more popular to the people of this country, I think he's got another thing coming.
Yeah, I don't understand quite where they're going with it, but, I mean, if you think Trump is not a geographic genius, because he mentioned about boots on the ground, well, look at what Iran is surrounded by. Going anti-clockwise, you've got Pakistan, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Iraq. None of them will let him launch a land campaign from their territory, which leaves you with D-Day. There is no chance in today's world, even with aerial superiority, that you can mount a D-Day campaign. There is going to be no boots on the ground. Without boots on the ground, he's going to lose.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised if he did throw boots on the ground just for the hell of it, just to stop us talking about the Epstein files or, you know, or the price of petrol or whatever it might be. But it seems like it's going to be extremely difficult, to say the least, because the Iranians have a military that numbers about a million. So overwhelming force is going to be difficult to find for the Americans.
Absolutely. And the other thing to remember is this lot launched on Saturday. What was released on Friday? 50-odd files from the Epstein thing, one of which a 13-year-old accused Trump of interfering with her.
Well, yeah, and Donald...
The day after, they launched the claiming attack.
Right, and Donald Trump and his spokespeople have vehemently denied all of the above. But let's just assume that the Epstein files come out at such a regular tick these days that one thing might look as though it led to another, but it's not necessarily so. All right, good talking to you, Mike. Thanks for that. 0345-6060-973. Clive says the UK could help Trump with a World War II-style lend-lease deal. This time we can supply America with a lot of substandard, overpriced junk at massive rates of interest. That's a good idea. Aylesford. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Nick.
Tony.
I think Keir Starmer's right for what he's doing right now. I hope he stays on this path, and I hope he's not going to get manipulated by Donald Trump. But let's be honest, Donald Trump, with this trade deal, is a crap trade deal, if you ask me. Not 10%, we need 0%. And whether Keir Starmer does what wanted to, like, help Trump out from the start, you're not going to please Trump in that way. And I think it's quite, ironic that everyone, like, I've had a row with people on Instagram about this, people who are living in Dubai, like, nearly, I think it's 100,000 in Dubai who have registered to come back, 200,000 in total in the Middle East.
Mm.
But they're like, saying, oh, I think it's quite ironic that they want to try and fly back. And I don't think we should let them back without them paying something. For it. And I was saying, there was a lot of people going in, on Instagram saying, oh, well, no, we're all happy over it. And I said, well, that's what everyone says. And I said,
well, they
deal with it.
They say that because they'll get thrown in prison if they don't, by the regime who are monitoring their social media feeds. And anybody that says anything that the regime in Dubai or wherever doesn't like, then they will pay the consequence. And I don't think anybody that fled this country in order to pay less tax should be allowed back in unless they pay the entire amount of tax that they saved by going there in the first place.
Yes, and then I was saying, well, imagine the stress. They were like, no, we're all right. And I was like, no, everyone says that. The stress, I couldn't deal with the stress. And, you know, the thing's gone on. I can't see this war ending anytime soon. And Laura Kunzberg, who I'm quite a big fan of, she was interviewing the Iranian ambassador to the UK this morning. And I was, like, listening to him. And he was saying, like, what Britain are doing is good. And they don't see us as, like, a target. And let's be honest, like, with Iran, if we were to get involved, there could be some, like, terrorism over here. And I think he's, like, and the guy, I could understand why Iran has sort of done what they've done. This is Israel's fault and the US's fault, and I don't think we should get involved. Let's talk about Tony Blair. I quite like him, but I disagree with what he's doing at the moment. I'm quite surprised that he's saying that Keir Starmer's wrong.
Yeah, what the hell is he doing, being a member of the Board of Peace? What on earth is that about?
No idea.
All right, thanks a lot, Tony. 0345-6060-973. Tom says, I strongly suspect that Trump will keep this war live right into the USA midterms to allow him to claim a state of emergency, therefore cancelling the elections that would almost certainly be a devastating loss for him and his deranged cult fans. Well, I've been predicting that for over a year now, that Trump, not specifically about Iran, but because that's only just happened. But I've been predicting that Trump will call a national emergency and then cancel the elections in the midterm, which are going to happen in November, for your safety. It seems a bit of a stretch to keep this going until November, because I think politically it'd be absolutely disastrous, because it's very unpopular now. And when when dead Americans start appearing on their TV screens, then it's only going to go down. So I would suspect that he will call a state of emergency, but I think it will probably be about something else. And I would imagine that. I mean, people are wondering, oh, well, you know, how is this going to end? I think Donald Trump will just end it on a whim, claim that he has won, and that'll be it. North Carolina. Hello, Gregory.
Greg will do.
Greg.
Mr. Abbott.
Yes, sir.
Hope you're well.
Good, thanks.
You know, sort of a U.S. Perspective here. I agreed with the military, Mr. Nance, well, whatever his rank was. Mm. But I think the key thing is, will the U.S. military revolt or hold the line when it comes to, you know, this nightmare we're sort of looking with? I think the U.K. in particular is sort of living in the past a bit. Jethro Tull, I think some dots need to be connected, because I don't really think that Trump or Hegseth and some of these people are really that stupid. I think it's part of a longer-term right-wing plot or program. It started with the neocons, and now it's evolved and metastasized into, you know, Iran. If you look at what he's done in 15, 18 months or whatever, it's not an aspect of U.S. life that he hasn't tried to fully impact. You know, I think this is really the problem. I don't think.
But this is not part of that, though, is it? This seems to be the opposite of that. You're talking about Project 2025.
25,
right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this is not America First, and this is not no more wars. It's the opposite of that.
Yeah, but I live in North Carolina in the Western Mountains, and I don't think anybody's got that message. I mean, they will follow him, you know, over the cliff and through the abyss.
Really? I thought that MAGA was rather splitting on this and Epstein, yeah. And I didn't think that this war, that even the idea of it, was going down very well with America at all.
No, I think what he's done to the media, what he's done, is in the process of doing to the judiciary. Okay, they've kicked back on the tariffs, but I think the jury's still out. Again, pardon the pun.
I'm not sure that's right. I'm looking at a poll now. By 56 to 44, respondents said they opposed military action. Just 36% approve of how Trump is handling Iran. And a majority think that Iran either represents a minor threat or no threat at all to the United States of America. And that's before they've seen dead people, dead Americans on their TVs.
Yeah. I beg to differ. I honestly think, because, you know, you try and reach out to Congress in particular, and they're just empty suits. They're just taking they're not challenging him at all. You've only got to look at C-SPAN and, you know, the congressional reporting.
Yeah, well, the Republicans all vote with him because they're petrified of him, and the Democrats are in the minority in both houses.
Well, the Democrats are absent without leave, aren't they, really? I
mean, well, what can they do? I mean, what could they practically do other than go on talk shows on television and say how appalled they are?
One other couple of last points before I go is I'm not sure I understand why the U.S. need additional bases. Aren't they tied, you know, joined at the hip with Israel? Israel's literally next door. They could easily run B-1, B-2 aircraft out of Tel Aviv or wherever. I mean, this is part of the fog of war. I just don't understand why Starmer and the UK in particular get dragged in. I was disappointed when he sort of went the middle ground and said, well, you can use it for defensive purposes, etc.
Yeah.
I kind of understand the politics. It would be much better to stay out. I think this is, you've got to play the long game here. And the UK, unfortunately, you know, it's obsessed with the past. You're still talking about Hillsborough. You're still talking about Bloody Sunday, for God's sake. I mean, it's a lifetime ago. You've got to, the ground has changed. The paradigms have shifted. And, you know, the Brexit thing, it's just self-harm. One last thing. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Designated Survivor, but at the State of the Union, the only person that wasn't there that I saw was Miller. Now, that's a pretty scary thought, if he's the Designated Survivor.
Yeah, and on that alarming note, I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, Greg. 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850, email nicka@lbc.co.uk. If you are on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone, 0345 6060 973.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As drones and missiles attack targets across the Middle East, the UK's response has been shameful at best. The government failed to get its first evacuation flight off the ground.
There was an issue with the checking in the airport side because it was a charter flight. The pilot then ran out of working hours.
They refused to prescribe the IRGC as a terrorist organisation.
We can't proscribe them under current terror legislation because there's a gap in terror legislation.
Is it any wonder President Trump has waged his own war of words at Sir Keir Starmer?
This is not the age of Churchill.
As the conflict continues in the Gulf, is it time for the Prime Minister to step up for the sake of the so-called special relationship?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low, slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
JP Morgan Personal Investing gives you the clarity to make more informed decisions on your investments, which is great, because right now, something else just became crystal clear. Your kid just outgrew the kids menu. Now he's ordering a truffle gnocchi? You consider making a don't gnocchi it till you try it joke, but now's not the time. Now's the time to grow his world, one bite at a time. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, we're talking about what's going on in Iran and whether you think that we should actually be supporting our friends in America or whether we should actually be being more Europe and saying, hell no, we won't go. 0345 6060 973. This text says, I'm at the point of crying now. Trump is having to wear a stupid MAGA cap just so he can rest his shaking hand on the brim while he honours his own dead warriors being repatriated with a salute. Well, yes. And interestingly, in America, Fox News, which is essentially Donald Trump's megaphone, has been showing clips of Donald Trump from a few years ago, who is saluting without a cap on, in order to cover up the fact that Donald Trump wore a golf hat throughout a ceremony this weekend, in which he saluted six flag-draped transfer cases carrying the remains of the first US troops to die in his war on Iran. Even Fox News thought that that was a bit much. He's standing there in a stupid white hat with USA written on the front of it in gold, which he uses to play golf in. And, I mean, at least he changed into a suit for it, I suppose. But that has not gone down very well at all, to the point that the propaganda arm of the White House, Fox News, took that video down and pretended that he didn't have a hat by showing an old video of Donald Trump saluting. Coventry. Hello, Frieda.
Hello, young man. Can I just list my little points? There's only three.
Go ahead. Please. Yes.
Right. Number one, I personally think Keir Starmer should have done a Spain and said a big fat no. Mm. That's one point. Number two is the Obama deal that Obama had with Iran worked, and they agreed to everything. And as soon as Trump got into power, he tore it up.
Yep.
And said he was going to do a better deal. But in fact, he's done absolutely the opposite. And in the process, he's actually not just messing around with America. He's actually wrecking the global economy, because the oil price has now gone up to 120 a barrel. Mm-hmm. Already. So I just think, you know, it's very, very worrying. And we've got virtually no gas storage facilities.
That's right.
In this country.
And because the Tories allowed the rough gas storage facility to close, and without that, we've got nothing.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think we're literally days away from running out of gas. So,
I suppose the only, well, it's not really positive, but, you know, the good bit about that is that we're not heading into winter, we're heading out of it.
Yes, that did cross my mind, but having said that, it depends how long this fiasco goes on for.
Yep.
And I just think it's terrible, not just for me or you, but globally, you know, the impact's going to be scary, really scary. And the amount of ships they've just been sinking and then boasting about, you know, they're oil tankers. And then they've set it all on fire in Iran. And, you know, it's just crackers. And is it, I've forgotten the name of the country in the Middle East, and they've shut down all their oil production. You know,
I mean, we've already seen the price of petrol go up at the pumps, and that is seeming, I mean, they're very, very quick to put prices up. I believe that they've actually put the price up on fuel that they had already bought at a lower price, but, you know, that's them. And we'll be talking about the economic consequences of this a little bit later on, but good to, were those your 3 points, Frieda?
Yes, sir.
Very good. All right, thanks for that. 0345. 6060973. Nadia in Hastings says, could you please remind everyone that Keir Starmer actually marched against the war in Iraq? So him not wanting to go to war behind Trump is his real belief. Witham. Hello, Alex.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
So we definitely shouldn't get involved. I mean, this is an illegal war, and the reasoning of which was given away by Marco Rubio last week, in which he said the only reason they basically joined in, and I'm paraphrasing, is because the Israelis were going to jump first and they didn't want to be left behind.
That's right.
So the idea that we should be joining a war that has no real confirmed goal, no way of measuring the goal, is just utterly bananas.
I would agree with that, yes. I mean, and the goal, if such a thing even exists, changes every day. First, he wants complete capitulation. He wants total surrender. And then his people said, no, he was just kidding about that. He doesn't want total surrender. And then Trump doubled down and said, oh, yes, I do. And then on another day, he said, we want assurance that they don't get any nuclear weapons. Well, they'd given them that already in a deal that he tore up. And then they were trying to remake that deal so that Donald Trump could have his signature on it. And they were doing just fine until Trump said, no, it's not going fast enough. And then they started lobbing bombs in it. Absolutely none of this makes any sense, apart from to the Israelis. Now, they've been completely clear about this for as long as I can remember. They want to either get rid of or completely destabilize the Iranian regime. And it doesn't really matter to them whether there's a civil war or there's, you know, any other kind of strife in Iran. It all suits the Israelis perfectly well. But what the Americans are getting out of it, I've got no idea.
I think it's just down to this strange grip on Trump that Netanyahu has. And we know Trump has quite an infantile belief of what strength is. Because I personally believe that Starmer is showing strength on this, as has the Spanish PM, because they've said no in the face of Trump's war of words upon them.
Mm.
But Trump, he likes seeing military, he likes seeing big boats, he likes seeing explosions. And as for the question of nukes, for the Americans, the question of whether Iran has them depends on the week it is.
Well, yes, they've been saying that Iran is 2 weeks away from having a nuclear weapon for about 10 years.
Yeah, it's been a very long time. But there's one more point I wanted to make, and that was in the US Constitution, only Congress can formally declare war.
Mm.
So what we have is no votes in Congress over this war, nothing to legalize it, and yet the military is going along with each and every order Trump gives. So why are we not seeing US admirals, generals disobeying unlawfully given orders?
I'll tell you why. It's because because Trump would fire them and take away their pensions.
Yeah, it's one explanation. So it all comes down to money.
Yep, that's right. Okay, good talking to you, Alex. Thanks for that. 0345-6060-973. Let's see, have I read this one? Yes, I have. So let's talk to James in Birmingham. Hello, James.
Hi, how are you? I spoke to you a few weeks ago.
Yes.
Nice to speak to you again. Basically, I just wanted to, without being too sarcastic, is it possible for... I already know the answer to this question. Is it possible to educate your viewers and please... listeners, I mean, I do beg your pardon. Is it possible to explain to your listeners where the base is in the world called... Is it called Fairfield, I think it's called?
Fairfield?
Yeah. Whereabouts in the world is that base?
I don't know. Is this a quiz? Where is it?
No, it's a sarcastic question. I'm asking. The reason why I'm asking you to tell everyone where that base is.
Right,
the
where
RAF
is it?
Base.
Right, go on.
I think it's somewhere down south. I think it was originally made for the D-Day landings. They made the big base for the Americans somewhere down south. I don't know exactly where it is. The reason why I was asking you this is because can everyone in the UK stop being so naive, no matter the semantics of what Keir Starmer says? We're now a part of this war. Whether the planes are coming from America to the UK using our bases. Okay, it might seem a small thing, it's just logistics, but don't be so naive. We are already a part of this war. It's just semantics.
Well, I wonder if the Iranians think that we're part of this war, and if they do, then I guess we are, whether we think we are or not.
Iran already, we're already Iran's enemies. It's just also, there's different levels of how they deal with different countries. It's all semantics. And it gets onto my one more point I want to make.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there's the son of the Shah, the late Shah. He's in America called Reza Pahlavi.
Yeah.
And in January, the protest, he was telling protesters on social media, right, carry on going onto the streets and then we will come. And then, you know, Trump, he said that on social media, said, you know, help is on the way. We know all this.
Right.
For example, and so many protesters died. Do you really think now America is carpet bombing, and Israel are carpet bombing Iran? Do you really think, and then the people are going to welcome in Reza Pahlavi, especially after a girl's 165 or more little girls were killed in a school?
Right,
is that a good way to bring in freedom?
No, not obviously not. No, but I'm not sure that the Iranians would associate Reza with that action. I think he's, I mean, as far as I'm aware, he's relatively...
Trump has messed him up, hasn't he? Trump has played him like a fool.
Well, I'm not sure what choice he had. And it does seem... everything about this is just appalling. And the people that we don't talk about very much are the Iranians themselves, who mostly, I would, as far as I'm aware, want rid of the regime. And I don't think that this is going to do it for them. Regime change from the air is a very difficult thing. I can't think of anywhere that that's actually been a success, and can't imagine that it's going to be a success this time. And neither is it reasonable for Donald Trump to sit in his golf club and tell unarmed people to rise up and go into the street and confront a heavily armed militia that number a million strong. Thanks for that, James. After the news, a new survey has shown that voters who typically vote on the left were most likely to be willing to vote tactically. Now, does that mean Nigel Farage's route to number 10 is blocked? We'll also look at the state of our rivers and the true scale of sewage spills. Why do you think the environment is now taking a political back seat? And finally, we cross to Washington for our weekly US roundup with Simon Marks. All that's to come. 0345-6060-973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight. Iran has announced the son of the late Ayatollah Ali Khamenei will be the country's new supreme leader. Mashaba Khamenei is a mid-ranking cleric with close ties to the Revolutionary Guard. Dana Stroll is a Middle East policy expert in Washington. She believes the appointment could raise questions.
For a revolutionary regime that was supposed to represent, you know, God on earth, we are now moving towards a monarchy, which is what the Iranian revolution was challenging, the Shah and a monarchy, a king, right? And so now we actually have this succession being passed to the son.
President Trump is claiming oil prices will drop rapidly once the nuclear threat posed by Iran is over. Writing this evening, he says the rises are a very small price to pay for the USA, world safety and peace. On top of that, he also says any fools would think differently. Downing Street says the Prime Minister and President Trump are looking forward to speaking again soon after talking on the phone on Sunday. The conversation came after the US leader criticised Sir Keir Starmer and the UK over his response to the Iran war. It's also believed the pair discussed the use of RAF bases by the US military. The Professor of Politics, Anthony Gleese, has been telling Nick Abbott on LBC Sir Keir Starmer has made some big mistakes.
He hasn't navigated a safe course. He also hasn't done the things that he ought to have done, and knowing as he did do, right at the beginning of February, he was told an attack was highly likely. He should have sent a destroyer, possibly even the aircraft carrier, the Prince of Wales, to the Mediterranean.
Rail passengers in and around Glasgow are being warned the city's central station will be closed during Monday morning after a major fire nearby. It began on Sunday afternoon at a vape shop on Union Street. Brian Gallagher runs a hair salon there. He's been telling LBC his business is gone.
I literally put my whole everything into that salon. My whole family put everything into that salon. The amount of hours I've spent decorating, redecorating, and yeah, it's just absolutely gutting.
And a murder investigation's begun after the discovery of a woman's body in County Fermanagh. She was in her 20s and was found dead at an address in Enniskillen. A 45-year-old man has been arrested. LBC weather, cloudy for most of the night with patchy rain moving north, chilly where the cloud does break, and a low of around 5 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Campaigners have claimed that the true extent of Britain's sewage pollution crisis is being hidden from us. Water companies are required to publish figures from storm overflow pipes in real time, but it appears that they are somehow getting around that. Let's talk about this to George Monbiot. George is the Guardian columnist and environmental campaigner, and he joins us on the line now. Hello, George.
Hi there.
It's interesting that this is coming out now because it's the subject of a TV programme, almost exactly like the post office scandal. What do you make of the situation as it is now?
Well, I thought Dirty Business, the series on Channel 4, is a brilliant summary of the problem. It's exactly the issue that I've been following all this time, where basically privatisation of water has been a complete catastrophe, and that has been compounded by the absolute capture and uselessness of the Environment Agency, which is the regulator in England, which is supposed to hold the water companies to account. But far from doing so, it is allowing them to get away with the murder of our rivers, with the absolutely disgusting pumping of vast volumes of sewage as a routine matter into our rivers, killing the life in them, causing epidemics of disease amongst people who swim in them and swim in the sea, where either the sewage is going direct into the sea or out of the rivers and into the sea. It's just an absolute ecological and social catastrophe, entirely avoidable, caused entirely by the fact that the water companies have a massive incentive to make profit, to cut costs, and that incentive outweighs their public service duty.
If you or I were to drop litter in the street, we could be fined £100 if we're spotted. Mm. If we dumped our builder's waste in a river, we'd probably get jail. How are these water company executives getting away with actions that are so much worse than that?
It's quite incredible, isn't it? And they wouldn't get away with it if it weren't for the complicity of the Environment Agency. And you know, I can't blame the Environment Agency by itself for this, because it's basically been told by successive governments to lay off the water companies. The water companies, they're politically powerful. We want to create the impression that privatization has succeeded, and so we don't want them being prosecuted. We don't want them being held to account for what they're doing. And the very few occasions when the water companies have been prosecuted, it's been because of the remarkable dedication of one or two people within the Environment Agency who have just stuck it out despite their useless bosses, despite the political environment they're in. They've done so despite the system, not because of it. And unfortunately, the fines that have been issued to water companies are in no way commensurate with the horrendous level of damage and disgusting pollution that they've caused.
Well, you said the word complicity, which is quite strong, and then you sort of let the Environment Agency off the hook and put the blame more on successive governments, I presume. Mm. Now, it was the Tories that privatised the water companies, and they've been in charge for most of the time since that has been the case. Is it essentially something that you can lay at their door?
Well, they've definitely made it much worse. I mean, first of all, the privatisation itself, and Margaret Thatcher, it just happens that the very first ever televised parliamentary session was Prime Minister's Questions, where Margaret Thatcher was answering questions about the water privatisation. And in fact, the Dirty Business series starts with that clip where she says, "It's going to be a great success, and time will tell. And you will see what the results will be." And of course, that's exactly we've seen what the results will be. And it hasn't been a great success, it's been a great disaster. And of course, they can't admit failure. You know, instead of saying, okay, we got this wrong, we've completely screwed it up, we've destroyed our rivers, we've made loads of people ill, we've even killed people as a result of this pollution, therefore we are going to change things, we're going to renationalise the water industry, and had they done so early on, it would have saved a huge amount of money and a huge amount of trouble. No, they can't admit that they got it wrong. And so instead of that, they say we're going to deregulate the water industry so no one's going to see how badly they're doing, because they're not going to get prosecuted. They're not going to be held to account. We're going to just put the whole thing under the carpet. And just as the water companies are pumping all our sewage into the rivers, we're going to push their dirty deeds under the carpet so no one can see.
So, really, is it the Tory party who don't want to lose face, having put us in this mess in the first place? They don't want to admit that there was a mistake, and so they are, is that word again, complicit in allowing the water companies to essentially do what they want, as long as they do it quietly?
Well, yes, but also, unfortunately, Labour has had abundant opportunities to step in and to renationalise, but it's been really reluctant to do so, and I think principally because it's so terrified of the billionaire press, so terrified of the power of corporations to attack and to make them look incompetent, etc. And so it hasn't stepped in. So this is a bipartisan problem. You know, I mean, it is okay. It's primarily been the Tories, but Labour, you know, are also got a case to answer in that they have not taken the abundant opportunities where, you know, especially nowadays when everybody can see what the water companies are doing, there's widespread public fury about it. This series would be a brilliant opportunity for Starmer's government to say, okay, enough is enough. You know, we've had this SH1T for far too long. We're literally swimming in it. So we're going to stop this. It can't possibly work, you know, because the incentive of the water companies is to extract money from the system. They've extracted, what is it, £85 billion so far in dividend payments. All that money should have been invested into the system. Instead, it's been sucked out and loads of it has been sent out to tax havens here, there and everywhere. We've lost all that money. And you know, how could it possibly work? Their interests are not our interests.
It seems extraordinary that they've been able to get away with it. Since 1989, the privatised water companies, mostly foreign-owned, have, like you said, paid themselves £85,000 million, while not fixing the infrastructure that they borrowed on to fund those payouts. And they put our bills up by 40% in real terms. It sounds like the kind of figures that the other waste management experts, the Mafia, could only dream of.
That's right. It's as if the Mafia had been so legalised. And, yeah, go ahead, guys, fill your boots, because this is exactly the same model. It is the same business model. And you know, the amazing thing is that a lot of the ownership of these water companies is by other countries' sovereign wealth funds. And so, in other words, you know, you can, people all over the world, countries all over the world have bought into this because it's so lucrative. It's just a license to print money. And they must be absolutely flabbergasted that our government is letting them do this. And the most amazing thing is there's only one government which is not allowed to own our water companies in England. And that's the British government.
And yet the Welsh Water is a non-profit company, no shareholders. Northern Ireland's water is government-owned. Scottish Water, a statutory corporation owned by the Scottish government. And the English Water is owned by Malaysia, Singapore, Hong Kong, Australia, and institutional investors for the super-rich like BlackRock and the Qatar Investment Authority, Canada, China, the UAE. It really is quite astonishing what has happened. And am I right in thinking that we are the only country who have been stupid enough to sell off all of our water and sewage?
Yeah, I mean, we've always wanted to be unique, and we certainly are in this respect. And no, I mean, you know, and there were one or two other countries which were thinking about it, and they saw what a catastrophe England's privatisation has been, and so, oh no, we don't actually want to go there. I mean, it's just, it is utter madness, and it's ideological madness. You know, it's this ideology which says the private sector knows best, the efficiencies of private industry, the state is inefficient, private industry is efficient, and it is efficient at certain things, like making money. It's very efficient at making money. It's very inefficient at running public services because its efficiency lies in making money. That's where its interest lies. And, you know, and it's not going to do anything out of the goodness of its heart. It's just going to find the most best route to making maximum profit. And the way to do that in the water industry is to dump all the excrement in the rivers.
And so the government is late in the game, making at least a face of doing something about it. And they've said that we're ordering the water companies to stop pumping untreated sewage into rivers by 2050. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, they've also ordered the vampires to stop sucking people's blood. And maybe that'll work. Perhaps those vampires will consider themselves chastened and will change their habits. But, I mean, the water companies, they haven't built the infrastructure for it. They're not going to build the infrastructure for it. We've still got this ancient system which has not been upgraded. It was being upgraded fine until it all got privatized, and then it just stopped dead. The model is wrong. It's not going to deliver. You know, if this government cared, if it did what it said, before it got into office, it said it was going to take action on our rivers and quickly and effectively. It would renationalize our water supply. It would bring us into line with all civilized countries by actually having a water supply owned by the people.
Now, do you think that the water companies are either taking advantage or they're being allowed to skip around whatever rules appear to be put in front of them? Because spills have decreased, apparently, by a couple of thousand between 24 and 2025. But the amount that's in those spills has increased. So they point very... piously to the number of spills that have decreased, but they mentioned nothing about the amount of sewage that's actually increased.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, they'll go, if the government says, this is a thing you need to attend to, they might attend to that, but then they'll find some other way around it. And, they're not dumb people, these. They're very clever at finding the best way round the rules, where they're not, they might sometimes be doing illegal things, but sometimes they're just acting completely legally, but still ruining our rivers. And it's never going to be any different to that because of the profit incentive. It's just fundamentally at odds with the proper management of our water supplies and the proper management of our rivers and seas. And you can't have the two things. It's like oil and water, there's another thing which seems to mix very well with water, but unfortunately that isn't being separated. It's just these are fundamentally incompatible things which are being thrown together, and the government's just crossing its fingers and saying, well, maybe they'll do better next time.
But it's extraordinary that any other company, if a building company or, like I said, a waste management company, they poured their waste into rivers rather than dealing with it properly, that they'd be fined out of existence and the managing directors would be in jail. So why are these particular company executives given a get-out-of-jail-free card?
Actually, I wish what you're saying was true. It isn't true. That all the polluters basically are being able to get away with it. So the way of disposing of liquid waste now, it's changed, is to pay the water companies to be able to take your tanker along to the head of the sewage works and pump it straight into the sewage works. There's not even any testing of what that tanker contains. And then it's all poured straight into the sewage works. This huge cocktail of toxins. A lot of it is landfill leachate, pumped straight in. Chemical industries, they can pump it straight in. They just pay a token amount of money to the water company, and in it goes. And so some of that goes straight through the sewage works, down into the river and into the sea. Some of it gets trapped in the sewage sludge. And guess what happens to the sewage sludge? 87% of it gets given or sold to farmers as very cheap fertilizer, and they spread it on the soil. Absolutely crammed with microplastics, with all sorts of horrible toxins. We have no idea what we're even doing.
And then we're eating it.
Yeah, exactly. It's contaminating the soil, it's contaminating crops, it's contaminating livestock, it's going back into the ecosystem. Nobody has a clue what's happening. And the sewage sludge now is a highly toxic product, partly because of all the other stuff which the water companies are letting into the system, but partly also because they're deliberately allowing chemical pollution into it, because the liquid waste disposers can just pay the water companies to dump it straight into the sewage works. And so actually, this is now a universal problem. It's as if the mafia has taken over the whole disposal system in this country.
God, it's actually worse than I thought. Mm. So, just finally, 82% of the British public, in the last poll I saw, want the water industry back in public hands. 82%. You couldn't get 82% of the public to say that the sun is nice. So why have successive governments not scored that easy goal?
Simply because they are afraid of upsetting corporate power. Now, Max Hastings, when he was editor of the Daily Telegraph under its then owner, Conrad Black, said something which really stuck in my mind. He said, Conrad sees himself as a fully paid up member of the rich man's trade union. He perceives any attack on another rich man as an attack on him. And you have this sort of class solidarity among corporations and the very rich, and they will ruthlessly punish any government which stands up to any one of them, and they will gather round to punish, and all the newspapers and the rest of it will attack the government and say they're communists and spread all kinds of smears, and governments are terrified of these people. And so you have to then ask yourself, sorry, is this a democracy or is it a plutocracy? Who's actually running this country?
Very good to talk to you, George. Thanks very much for your time. George Monbiot, Guardian columnist and environmental campaigner. And just as an aside, by the way, talking briefly about Iran, obliquely, Country Joe just died, as in Country Joe and the Fish. And his most famous song was about Vietnam, and it seems that it's appropriate in 2026, just as it was in 1956. 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? I don't know. I don't give a damn. The next stop is Tehran. Of course, it was Vietnam back then, but, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Going to take a short break, after which, oil and petrol prices spike following the conflict in Iran. Donald Trump said on Truth Social, this will drop rapidly after the Iran nuclear threat is gone, which is as believable as anything else he says. But what is all this going to mean for domestic consumers? We'll find out next.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
From rusty chains to fancy frames and everything in between, sign up for British Heart Foundation's iconic London to Brighton bike ride. Because it's not your wheels, it's how you use them. Whether you're a brand new rider or seasoned pro, challenge yourself this June and make your ride matter with British Heart Foundation. And you won't need any fancy gear, just your helmet and your bike. Sign up today, search London to Brighton bike ride and keep us beating.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Bookers, are you ready for the drop? Cause on the beach you're dropping. Perks! Book a five-star holiday for 2026 and you get a free lounge access perk. So get booking now.
Conditions apply. 7-night minimum stay, outbound only from selected airports for up to 6 people, subject to lounge availability, excludes cruises, after an atoll protected.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
Qatar's energy minister has warned that the price of a barrel of oil could surge to more than $150, and in his words, it would drag down global economies. Let's talk to Susanna Streeter about this. Susanna is Chief Investment Strategist for Wealth Club and joins us on the line now. Hello, Susanna.
Hello, great to be with you.
Do you think that the Qatar Energy Minister is being somewhat hyperbolic, dragging down global economies?
I think he wanted the world to wake up to the potential repercussions of a prolonged conflict because that already has been widespread damage to gas facilities in Qatar. The world's largest LNG export plant was damaged by a drone. That's seen gas prices rise pretty dramatically. And what he's trying to do is bring to some kind of resolution the conflict that we're currently facing right now. Now, if oil continues to be disrupted at this level and the conflict is prolonged, you are going to see, I think, prices shoot up even higher. What you saw on Friday after he made those comments was that equity markets at the FTSE 100 turned from positive to negative. A real wave of worry rushing through markets once again, because already with prices rising by 10% alone on Friday, that is going to cause extra problems for companies already grappling with high energy costs.
And this is because of the strikes within Iran, but also the Strait of Hormuz more or less coming to a halt. Tell us about the importance of the Strait of Hormuz.
It is absolutely critical. It's a route that normally handles around 20 million barrels of oil and petroleum products per day, around 20% of gas supplies and crude oil supplies globally head through this route. That is why it's considered absolutely crucial. And the severe disruption that you're seeing is why we've seen crude prices rise so significantly. And of course, those extra attacks as well on those facilities I was telling you about, also pushing up energy costs on markets around the world, which will feed through. Already we're seeing it. Prices at pumps are rising and wholesale gas prices have risen dramatically. And it is concerns about just how long this will continue that is this pushed up the prices. And I think as the conflict at the moment seems so entrenched, you're likely to see prices rise again this week. This volatility is set to continue.
Yes, what do you make of the rises, but particularly at the pumps? Because that's the very obvious sign that we can all see. We drive past the garage and we can see that it's 5p more now than it was this time last week. But surely most of those petrol stations will have bought the petrol at the old price. Are they essentially ripping us off by raising the price of a good that they have already purchased at a lower price before this all kicked off?
Well, yes, I mean, it happened before. Prices seem to go up like a rocket and then come down like a feather. It has certainly been a pattern, and we're already seeing the prices at UK pumps for petrol increasing by 3.7 pence and diesel by 6 pence, reaching a 16-month high. However, there had already been warnings that you would start to see this coming through in a week to a fortnight, and that's exactly what has been happening. So I would expect, actually, the prices to continue to rise this week.
And what do you think the effect has been and will be in the future on this, the sort of halting of the transfer of goods? Because the shipping has been stopped, and it's not just particularly in the Strait of Hormuz. If shipping companies can't get insurance, and insurers are somewhat reticent at the moment, then the ships don't sail, do they? Air freight has also been impacted by this. So with a combination of those two things, with the sort of seizing up of the of international trade, what's going to be the effect on that?
I mean, you're not seeing a complete seizing up of trade. You're certainly seeing much more disruption. Already, ships were avoiding the Red Sea. They had returned to some extent. But now another passage sink, severe disruption. It is, of course, adding to freight costs. However, Saudi Arabia has said that actually it is going to be using the Red Sea route to move some of its energy supplies out of the region. So it's not that both passages are completely blocked, although there is significant disruption. It is going to add to freight costs. And we have had President Trump say that actually the US would backstop the insurance. However, that process isn't really clear exactly how it would play out. And actually, freight companies are avoiding the Strait of Hormuz altogether. It's clear that it is an extra headache and it will lead to higher costs, but I think it's really going to show up in the energy markets first. There is the potential for it to show up in fertilizer markets because of the way that fertilizer is manufactured, needing key ingredients. And that could be disrupted by what's happening in terms of the Strait of Hormuz. We'll have to see how that plays out. These are all kind of worst case scenarios if it's a really prolonged conflict. We certainly just don't yet know how this is going to evolve for the moment. Certainly, it seems as though there isn't any easy solution.
And the economies of the world so far that have been affected the worst are Asia and Europe. America seems to have been getting away with it so far. Why is that?
Well, because it's not so reliant on energy imports as other countries around the world. That's why you saw South Korea's KOSPI fall by around 12%, that index, last week. There actually had to be a circuit breaker because of the high reliance of South Korea on energy imports. And of course, Europe, as we know, has faced a real challenge trying to wean itself off Russian gas, and actually relied on around 12% of the gas used in the European Union, relied on being bought from Qatar. And now, of course, with this attack on the gas facilities, is partly why you're seeing European gas prices rise so much. But certainly some countries are more affected than others.
Now, just to go back to the Qatar energy minister, he warned that the price of a barrel of oil could surge to $150. I think he implied that if it went to 200, then, in his words, it would bring down the economies of the world. Is that him being somewhat exaggerating, or is that actually a possibility?
Well, I think that is quite an extreme scenario, bringing down economies of the world. It would certainly cause severe disruption, and certain economies would be hit more than others. In the UK, for example, businesses have already had to grapple with very high energy costs compared to other countries. And certainly if you saw energy costs rise to that extent for a prolonged period of time, it would be damaging. I think what we're seeing already, there will be an effect on growth, partly because of the effect on inflation, because of course with higher energy prices it's going to have an impact on the headline rate of inflation. That is why we're not expecting to see interest cuts come so quickly in the UK and also in the United States, for example. And there's likely to be a kind of wait and see mood percolating at central banks for the foreseeable future. And that in itself will affect growth, I think, as well, because there had been this expectation that lower interest rates coming through would help revitalize growth, particularly in the United Kingdom. So it is already going to have an effect.
Very good to talk to you, Susanna. Thanks so much for your time. That's Susanna Streeter, Chief Investment Strategist for Wealth Club. Now, still to come, we are going to be talking to Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent, for the latest from there. And after the news, left-wing tactical voting may have a big say at the next general election. Why aren't the right-wingers inclined to do the same? That's to come. Let's have a news update now with Tim Daly.
Iran has announced the son of the late Ayatollah Ali Khamenei will be the country's new supreme leader. Mujtabah Khamenei is a mid-ranking cleric with close ties to the Revolutionary Guard. The Foreign Office has withdrawn some of its staff and dependents from Lebanon. Lebanon says nearly 400 people have died during a week of conflict between Hezbollah there and Israel. And rail passengers in and around Glasgow are being warned the city's central station will be closed during Monday morning after a major fire nearby. It began on Sunday afternoon at a vape shop on Union Street. LBC weather, cloudy for most of the night with patchy rain moving north. Chilly where the cloud does break with lows of around 5 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment that you relax, knowing that Barclays Advanced Tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Oh, just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Backing your future.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, so my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Leading Britain's conversation. Nick Abbott. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Nigel Farage's dream of entering number 10 could be extinguished by tactical voting among left-leaning voters. This is according to a new poll for the iPaper. The survey found that supporters of the Labour Party, the Liberal Democrats and the Green Party are significantly more willing to consider tactical voting than those who back the Reform Party or indeed the Conservatives. Peter Kellner is a political commentator and pollster, former president of YouGov, and he joins us on the line to talk about this now. Good evening, Peter.
Good evening, Nick.
Well, Nigel Farage would no doubt call it cheating. He has a record of complaining about elections that he lost, like his close friend Donald Trump. But is it cheating to vote for more centrist parties to keep an extremist party from taking total control of a country against the wishes of a vast majority?
No, I don't think it's cheating. And the problem we've got in Britain is we have a voting system, first past the post, which was essentially designed for a two-party system, like we had when I was growing up many decades ago. But we now have a multi-party system. And therefore, when people are looking around, they don't want to waste their votes. So if there's a party they really dislike, then they will not necessarily vote for the party they most want, but for the party that they think is most likely to defeat the party they hate most. And more people dislike Reform than dislike any other party. And that's part of the reason why this BMG poll shows that voters on the progressive side, Labour, Lib Dem, Green, are more likely to vote for each other in order to keep out Reform.
Yeah, has that actually been established, or is it somebody trying to make the numbers fit that narrative?
Well, there are two things. One is, this is not the first poll to show this kind of trend. I've seen a couple of YouGov polls, one or two other companies, more in common. You know, this is a fairly well-established trend. But the other thing is look at what's happened. We had the by-election, 10 days ago, up in Manchester, at Gorton and Denton, where people wanted to stop Reform, and they ended up voting Green, because they came to the conclusion locally, the Green candidate was the most likely to win. So they voted Green, and that kept out Reform. Or a few months ago, there was a by-election in Wales for the Welsh Senate, where the Plaid Cymru came through because people wanted to keep Reform out, and Plaid Cymru was seen to be the best option for doing it. And so it's not a surprise to you. But can I just add one thing, Nick, which is that one of the reasons why Reform could suffer is that, you know, a lot of seats for the next election are likely to be essentially Reform versus Conservative contests. They'll be the top two parties locally. And the evidence I've seen suggests that not a lot, but enough people, Labour or Lib Dem or Green, would prefer to vote Conservative if that's the best way to keep Reform out. And so some of the data I've looked at suggests that Reform would fail to pick up seats going to the because they'll go to the Conservatives as much as going to Labour, Lib Dem or Green. So it is very much an anti-Reform move.
Well, I wonder if you think that the reluctance of Reform supporters to vote tactically for other parties, because that's what this poll appears to suggest, and other parties' adherents being quite susceptible to the idea of voting for other parties in order to keep the one they don't like out. I mean, does that indicate that Reform voters essentially have joined a cult, that they're extremists, that they can't work with anyone else?
Well, not necessarily that fewer Conservatives and Reform voters are willing to vote tactically, but a fair number are. It's a third rather than 50 or 60%. But again, if you look at the arithmetic of constituencies, the next election, where Reform, there are very few seats that where Reform are going to be out of it, where Conservatives will be the obvious alternative, and so there aren't as many opportunities for Reform voters to line up behind the Conservatives. There will be some places, and it will happen in some places, but it won't happen in nearly as many places as the progressive or centre-left, whatever you want to call it, parties voting for one for each other. There is one caution I'd make, though, if I may, Nick, which is it does depend on people having a clear idea locally which is the anti-reform party that's best placed to defeat them. At the last election, the Liberal Democrats did very well on tactical voting, but it was very, very clear the 70 or 80 seats where the Lib Dems were best placed, there were a lot of tactical voting websites, the position was quite clear. It might not be that clear in as many seats at the next election. So it will depend on tactical voting websites, on polling that looks at individual seats and models them. It will depend on the information being clear. If the information is clear as to who can beat reform, then I think they're in real trouble. But if the information in a lot of seats isn't clear as to where to vote tactically, they may survive.
Yes, that's exactly what the Reform Party said. They said that people won't know which party to vote for tactically to keep reform out because of what they call the noise of a general election. But, I mean, that surely is what the internet is for.
Well, yeah. I mean, what will happen is, as at the last election, probably even more of them, there'll be these tactical voting websites, and they will draw on polling called MRP. These are big sample national polls, which look under the bonnet of voting by class, by age, and gender, and income, and the rest of it. And they will look at each constituency and look at the likely configuration there. Now, if those tactical voting websites broadly agree with each other and suggest a pretty clear alternative to reform locally, then tactical voting will take place and tactical voting will be very damaging to reform. If the tactical voting sites disagree or are unclear, then reform might come through. And it's going to, I mean, you know, for people who are interested but not partisan, like me, it's going to be fascinating to see whether tactical voting is able to take off. If it's able to take off because the guidance is clear, it will happen and it will have a big effect.
Reform's polling has been falling and they just lost Gorton and Denton to the Greens, as we've said. Do you think they've peaked?
I think they could have peaked. They started to dip around Christmas, but they dipped more since the Gorton and Denton by-election. They're down, if you look at the average of the five or six polls that have been conducted in the last 10 days, they're down about 3 points. So it looks to me as if part of what's happening is that a chunk of the reform vote, the reform surge over the last year or so, has simply been people who are dissatisfied with the main parties, Labour and Conservative, and are looking around for something fresh and different. And some of the people who were going to reform 6 months ago, I think could now be going to Green. It sounds odd, far right to far left, but these kinds of labels don't matter much to voters. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with the mainstream parties. And if the Greens look fresh and honest and sincere, they think Greens are on my side, then they'll vote Green. So there is a problem. And the thing is, Nick, if you take the national figures, if reform end up at the next election on around 30-31%, which is where they were before Christmas, then tactical voting might deprive them, but they'll still do pretty well. They'll still be maybe the largest party, if not a majority. But if they're down to, say, 25%, not that far down, because they would have won seats on a lot of narrow majorities, they'll be in real trouble in terms of seats. So a combination of tactical voting plus a modest dip in their overall national share, and they could end up not with 300 seats, but maybe 150 or 200. It changes the politics of the next election dramatically.
And do you think that there's been a change in the air since Gorton and Denton? Because before that, it seemed that, well, everybody was thinking that Reform was going to win that by-election. But since they lost, that sort of air of invincibility has dissipated. The notion that winning number 10 for Reform was inevitable seems to have gone.
But the test, I think the big test, will come in, about 8 weeks' time, the beginning of May, when we have elections to the Welsh Assembly, the Scottish Parliament, throughout London, and in much but not all of the cities and counties outside London in England. Now, last year, Reform did spectacularly well, and they got an estimated national share of the vote of around 30%. Now, I think if Reform matched that in May, then they'll recover, you know, some of the momentum that they've clearly lost in the last few weeks. But if reforms start dipping below, they'll still almost certainly be the most popular party, according to the, you know, the projection of all the votes. But if they're on 26, 27%, rather indicating what the polls are saying, down from their peak, if the results confirm the polls that they're below their peak, yes, then I think they could be in long-term trouble.
Do you think that part of the problem for Farage is that he is closely associated with Donald Trump? He seems to spend more time pursuing Donald Trump, like a lovesick teenager, than he spends improving the lives of his Clacton constituents. Do you think his starry-eyed admiration for Trump is a hindrance to his dream of taking over the country?
Yes, I think it is, but in a particular way, because we've now, for the first time, got a clear difference in the British government's view of a major issue, the attack on Iran, from Trump's position. And all the polling of the last week or so shows that not many people in Britain are on Trump's side. Not many people think it was the legal or the right or the proper thing to do to attack Iran. So the public are not on reform's side on this argument. So being allied to Trump, I think, is more of a handicap now than it was a few weeks ago.
Keir Starmer was put up against the leaders of all the other major parties, and he was beaten only by a whisker by Ed Davey. In all other cases, Keir Starmer came out as a more popular potential prime minister than any of the other leaders, and he beat Farage hands down. So, given that, how is it that Farage and Reform have managed to dominate news programs and social media? Is it a concerted effort, you think, by the same people who facilitated Trump's return to the White House?
Look, it's really odd, because Keir Starmer's own personal ratings are terrible. Depending on which poll you look at, they're either the worst or almost the worst of any prime minister in the history of modern history of polling, which goes back, 60 or 70 years. What's on Starmer's side is there's no other yet obvious successor on the Labour benches. There are a number of people like Wes Streeting, like Angela Rayner, like Andy Burnham, who would like to take over, but none of them is dominant. But equally, leaders of the other parties, Kemi Badenoch, her personal ratings are actually up on where they were a few months ago. She's been rising, but she's still in negative territory. It's not so much that she's popular, but that she's less unpopular than she was. People like Ed Davey, they don't think he's papabile. They don't think he's got Prime Minister all over him. And again, Nigel Farage is not as popular as he was. So people don't trust Keir Starmer. But against both his rivals, both in the Labour Party and in other parties, he is in the fortunate position that rather masks his own intrinsic unpopularity with voters.
Very good to talk to you, Peter. Thanks so much for that. Peter Kellner, the political commentator and pollster, a former president of YouGov. Now, we're going to take a short break, and then we will be speaking to Simon Marks, the LBC's Washington correspondent.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
It's been International Women's Day, so who for you is the most inspirational woman ever and why? And Iran names its new Ayatollah as Mujtaba Khamenei. How do you think this change of leadership will affect both Iran and the conflict?
Richard Spur at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Amazing deals on package holidays. Pay now.
I've got tickets to that sold-out show. Message now.
Your subscription's been suspended. Update your payment details.
Final warning. To receive your package, pay the fee immediately.
Mum, I've had an accident. Please send money.
There's been suspicious activity on your bank account, and I need a few personal details.
Fraud is getting more sophisticated. Always stop, think, and check. Stay ahead of scams at gov.uk/stopthinkfraud.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Caterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena, lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, go-karts, trampolines, magical wood and cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only. Subject to availability terms apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Simon Marks is LBC's Washington correspondent and he joins us on the line now. Hello, Simon.
Evening, Nick.
So a seventh member of the US Armed Forces has died in the conflict. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. That was confirmed earlier today by U.S. Central Command and the Pentagon. They have not named the member of the armed forces that has raised the death toll to seven now in this conflict. They say they are contacting next of kin. The only information that we have is that the slain soldier died a week after being wounded in an Iranian attack on a military base in Saudi Arabia, where U.S. troops are stationed. So that indicates that the injuries were sustained early in the conflict. I mean, as things were getting underway last weekend, and of course the Iranians began reprisals for the incoming attacks they were receiving from both Israel and the United States, and attacking some of their own neighbors in the region, including Saudi Arabia. The Trump administration would like everyone to believe that this is all moving at a rapid clip and faster than the military planners had anticipated, although we still have absolutely no idea how long it's going to last. We know that at varying points, President Trump has spoken about an initial plan of maybe 4 or 5 weeks. The Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, has spoken of a range of different numbers that go at the thick end of the wedge all the way up to 8 weeks of possible military engagement by the United States. But the word from the president this weekend was that this is going to continue for as long as it takes, and that the American public need to be ready for much more intense action in the days ahead by both the U.S. and the Israeli militaries, following on from those just astonishing attacks on oil storage facilities in Tehran that left many residents of that city breathing in noxious fumes and smoke today, and basically enduring what was essentially crude oil rain that was pouring down on them, with all sorts of concerns about the health implications of that. The president has issued a message to the American people over his social media platform just within the last hour, saying short-term oil prices, which will drop rapidly when the destruction of the Iran nuclear threat is over, is a very small price to pay for the USA and for world safety and peace. Only fools would think differently. Well, with the price of oil surging over $100 a barrel just in the last few hours, American motorists are already paying the price for this war. Diesel, the price at the pump rose over 70 cents a gallon in a single week last week. That's a record for price rises when it comes to diesel. And petrol wasn't that far behind. I mean, it was up around 40, 43 cents a gallon across the country. Not record territory, but definitely concerning territory for a country that has been told by President Trump that it doesn't need to waste its time pursuing the green new scam, and that he is, of course, relaxing fuel standards for the country's car manufacturers. Forget about all of those electric vehicles. Let's all go back to our gas guzzlers. And yet here he is demonstrating why that in and of itself itself is a foolhardy strategy, given that he is simultaneously waging a war in Iran that has sent the price of oil soaring. So that's where we are on the day that Iran selected its new supreme leader, Mojtaba Khamenei, the surviving son of the former supreme leader who was killed, of course, last Saturday, a man that the president of the United States has described as a lightweight. So you can take it from him. He's not impressed with this decision by the assembly of experts in Iran, even as the Israelis, of course, have publicly said that anybody who becomes the next supreme leader or the one after that, or the one after that, they are going to go after and target for assassination.
Even if that person is selected by Donald Trump, because that's what he said he wanted to do. He wanted to have a hand personally in choosing the next leader of Iran. I mean, how deluded is that?
Well, he says he must have a role. It's more than want. He must be given a role in selecting the new leader of Iran. And, you know, we're going into the second full week of this, Nick, and we still really have no idea what it's about. So in that Truth Social posting tonight, he says that oil prices are going to drop rapidly when the destruction of Iran's nuclear threat is over. But this is the man who said that he'd destroyed Iran's nuclear threat last July.
Obliterated it.
And preventing Iran from getting access to a nuclear weapon is only one of several official objectives, including the eradication of the Iranian Navy, which has, I think, about 115 vessels, of which they claim they've eradicated north of 25, but certainly not the majority of them yet. And also it's about cutting off Iran's access to its stockpile of ballistic missiles. But as we've seen over the last week, I mean, the ballistic missiles are certainly one tool at their disposal, but drones are another thing altogether. And they've got almost a limitless supply of those. And they're being given targeting information by the Russians. The Russians are telling the Iranians where American forces are located, giving them information about how to target those American forces. And we're in the absolutely astonishing position here where the Trump administration doesn't seem to care that the Russians are actively working with the Iranians, trying to help them kill or injure American troops. Even if it's happening, it's not making a difference, said the White House press secretary. And Trump himself berated the Fox News, White House correspondent, Pete Ducey, for even daring to ask him a question about Russia's role in this conflict. I think it was on Friday, calling it a stupid question, saying he was surprised that, you know, I have a lot of respect for you, but I'm surprised you raised that question. And he just completely ignored it and moved on to take another question from another reporter. So once again, we sit here being totally bamboozled by the nature of the relationship between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, and still unable to identify the plan for how this conflict ends. They've tonight announced that they're evacuating diplomats from the U.S. embassy in Saudi Arabia. So, you know, on the one hand, the public is being asked to believe that everything's moving at a fantastic clip. You know, every time Pete Hegseth stands in front of a camera, he performs like a seal and sort of, you know, engages this ludicrous B-movie actor version of a defense secretary and tells the Americans that death and destruction is raining down on the Iranians and they've never seen anything like it. But on the other hand, we're going into the second full week of this and they've just started evacuating diplomats from the embassy in Riyadh. So, you know, I think you have to look at this and wonder where all of this is going. Certainly Trump is rejecting the idea of Khamenei's son as the supreme leader, but he indicated last week in one of the many conversations he's had by phone with individual reporters that he was up for working with a cleric. He's not opposed to a clerical leader. So is this about regime change? Is this about doing another Venezuela? Does he even know what this is all about? I don't think we know.
Yes, and it's interesting that he might have had a fight with Fox News, but Fox News is still on his side, because in what they call the dignified transfer of the dead American military personnel that Donald Trump showed up to salute, he was he had his golf hat on, which caused some consternation, and Fox News, seeing that, played a clip of a previous time that Donald Trump had been saluting the dead when he didn't have a hat on. And then I think they apologized for it afterwards, but then did it again.
So they got the old archive out, which they used, many viewers believe, in an effort to pretend that the archive was what happened at Dover Air Force Base yesterday, so that they could spare any more of this controversy over Trump wearing the baseball hat and not removing the baseball hat as the caskets came off the plane. And then they apologized for it and said, amid a huge fuss, and said that this had been done inadvertently. Now, I've worked in a lot of television newsrooms. I've even, on occasion, back in the past, worked at Fox. And I know, and I can tell you that if the archival system is so efficient that you can very, very quickly lay hands on old footage of the president welcoming caskets back, as opposed to the actual stuff that you filmed only yesterday, either I have not come across that kind of efficiency in archival systems in other newsrooms that I've worked at, or the archival system at Fox has improved dramatically in the many years since I was last on there.
Very good to talk to you, Simon.
Cheers,
as
Nick.
Always, that's Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, on which you can stay up to date with all the latest news. There's videos on there and opinion. If you don't have it, it's free. Get your LBC app for free from your app store now. I'll be back Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Coming up at 4, it's Ian Payne. But first, here's Richard Spurr. In the event of something appalling happening, let's have the news with Tim Daly instead.
Good morning from Global's newsroom. Iran has chosen a new supreme leader despite warnings from Donald Trump his appointment would be unacceptable. Mujtaba Khamenei is taking over from his father, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, following his death. Naga Mortazavi from the Iran podcast has been telling LBC Iran had to be ready to make the change.
This was a day that they prepared for, that they expected. And I mean, the Iranian constitution also has predetermined process in the Iranian constitution.
There are warnings fuel prices will rise again because of the war in Iran.
We're already seeing the prices at UK pumps for petrol increasing by 3.7 pence and diesel by 6 pence, reaching a 16-month high. However, there had already been warnings that you would start to see this coming through in a week to a fortnight, and that's exactly what has been happening. So I would expect, actually, the prices to continue to rise this week.
Susanna Streeter is the head of money and markets for Hargreaves Lansdown. She's been telling LBC severe disruption on shipping in the Straits of Hormuz is also influencing rises in the price of oil and gas. Glasgow's Central Railway Station has been closed until further notice because of a major fire at a nearby vape shop. Dozens of services were cancelled on Sunday after it began in Union Street. LBC's Alan Zazinski has been watching the emergency services at work.
This is a really massive fire. We're told that they're pumping water out of the River Clyde to try and battle the blaze, of course. They've extended a cordon right across the city centre, including the Central Railway Station.
The government says it's looking to create a patriotic renewal of communities in England under its social cohesion plan. It includes proposals to create an anti-Muslim hostility czar and identify a new definition of Islamophobia. And in sport, the League One strugglers Port Vale have shocked Sunderland with a 1-0 win in the fifth round of the FA Cup. They joined Southampton in the quarter-finals after they scored a late penalty to get past Fulham by the same scoreline. Leeds United beat Norwich City 3-0. LBC weather, cloudy for most of the night with patchy rain moving northwards. Chilly, where the cloud does eventually break with a